And welcome to GFW Radio. Wow, that was loud. That was loud in my own ear. It's September 10th, 2008, and I'm here with the full Brodio crew for maximum Brodiosity. Let's do the intros and get on with this show. You.
Me, Ryan Scott.
Anthony.
Robert Ashley.
Sean Elliott.
And we got Skip on the boards. And if anybody hears any crunching in the background, it's because Robert Ashley is eating his lunch right now, which is a cheddar-flavored Chex Mix.
Oh.
With 60% less fat.
Well, fair. They take a box of mac and cheese, and they dump the cheese powder into like cereal. You can probably make that on your own, actually, for cheaper.
Yeah. I wasn't really, you know, looking to make my own Chex Mix. I was at Walgreens. I was starving. And I wish that they had left the 60% fat where it was so I wouldn't have to eat so much of it to get full.
60% less fat?
Yeah.
So it has 40% the same amount of fat.
Well, it
if
sucks.
If I do my math correctly.
It sucks. I should have bought Doritos.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Doritos.
Yeah.
I think the Doritos orange dust is the same as the Kraft macaroni and cheese orange dust.
I don't know. I don't think it's as sharp.
I want to know
really?
Who of you guys has poured out the orange dust to eat it on its own.
We could have an orange dust, you know, like blind taste test.
I wish that they sold Doritos orange dust on its own.
Oh, my God. That'd be so good.
You could just put it on anything you want
Popsicles.
To. Like, there would be all these, like, super ghetto recipes for making Doritos cake.
Fry a fish.
Oh, my God.
Fry a fish in it.
Yeah. Oh, God. They would do that.
I bet.
Yeah, fried catfish and Doritos
dust. They should
dust.
Do like an Iron Chef with Dorito dust. I would so watch that.
The secret ingredient, Dorito dust. And then you get the shot of the chef and they're like, what will I do?
Anyway.
Gelato is always the answer.
Gelato?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any weird ingredient, gelato. That's
yeah.
The Iron Chef.
Have you guys watched Iron Chef America?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite do it for me. Not the same way.
Mm-mm.
It's all right.
It's all right.
They don't have enough foods that I find incredibly disgusting.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
They feel more normal on the American one.
Yeah.
Like last one I watched, it was just some fish. It's like, really?
Yeah.
I want to see, yeah, whatever.
And they try to, like, you know, rip off the original presentation, which seems kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Also, like last time I was on, or I was on, because I'm always on that show. Last time.
Are you Iron Chef Doritos?
Yeah. Last time I watched the, you know, they have the one chef, his name is Jeffrey something or other. He's like that older sort of authority. He has like a lot of authority. He's written a bunch of food books. But then the person in the middle is often a guest. And this one last time I watched, it was some like random entertainment correspondent for Entertainment Weekly. And she looked like she was like 24 years old. And I was, you know, when she was critiquing the Iron Chef's food, I was thinking, like, those guys totally looked like they were thinking, like, who the fuck are you to judge my food? You know,
I really could have used a little less mustard seed in that dish. This was really too pungent for me, you know. And she writes, like, movie reviews. I was thinking, like, God, what for this guy to
you
sit there.
You already sound like someone who's got a job developing games.
That's what I think about all you fuckers reviewing my Sims game. No, but it really did make me think about that. It did make me think that's probably what they think about us.
Since I'm the one who's consistently keeping the show off track and needs to be reined in by you, Jeff, since I will never, you know, like without you here, I'll do nothing but make dick jokes. I'll use this opportunity to bring us into the domain of games.
Okay.
Where on Shoe and Kristen Sword Thumbs.
Some,
yeah. Not at you, at people on,
I know.
At members, at people in our audience,
yes,
who for whatever reason think I'm absolutely incapable of like moderating my own, you know, behavior and switching between different, you know.
It's true. I got labeled as the guy who keeps you in line when it's really quite usually the opposite.
It was just both back and forth. I mean, like when we talk, I mean, like right now the whole Dorito thing. It's not because we can't contain ourselves and we just decide like, hey, let's run with it and see what happens. We think.
Well, I thought it was...
Yeah, look at Robert. Robert doesn't even know he's here.
I'm
just really regretting bringing Chex Mix.
I just thought it was interesting.
I didn't know there were going to be cameras.
Sad that this was your lunch.
Yeah, no,
it's
fucking sad.
Because it's a, you know, it's a sort of a glimpse into your, you know, vaguely pathetic life.
And if you could see beneath this shirt, you would see the consequences of a life of eating snacks.
We are filming, so you could take the shirt off.
Last night we had dinner, and Robert revealed to us that he wears glasses so that people don't think he's, well, I mean, he wears glasses to see better, but rather the context, because you don't want to be taken as a perpetual stoner or something. But at the same time,
this is the Sarah Palin glasses.
Not only that, not only are they the Sarah Palin glasses, but a second after he got done explaining to us that this was the case, we're in this restaurant and he's doing the sounds of turtles mating sex at like full volume. We had to remind him that, like, you got the glasses on. Well, maybe we can get him to do that later.
I don't know. I just noticed, like, in college when I got glasses, people treated me differently. Because I, without glasses, I look like fucking dumbass.
Did they punch you more?
No.
No.
No. Not at all.
You had a better school life than I did.
When did you get? No, I'm not saying I never got. I said not punched more. I definitely got my ass whipped plenty. But in college, I didn't get my. Didn't
you? Did that ass whipping?
Would make
you
sense.
The ass kicking like, stopped in college, didn't it?
Assault.
Yeah.
For being different.
No, there was no like, assaulting for glasses. It was pretty common in college to have glasses, I think.
Yeah, as I say, like Ryan, like you really had people. Fuck with you?
Now that I think about it, not in college.
Yeah, see, that would
just
be...
just making it up.
When's the last time you got your ass kicked, Ryan?
Got my ass kicked. That's a pretty strong
That's slander
it.
To all the bullies out there in the world.
Or you kick someone's ass, I was just sort of assuming.
Okay, that's an even... Yeah, okay, I don't know if I can answer that
okay,
one.
So when's the last time
he doesn't
want
to, you know,
was
open
it elementary
himself
school,
up to lawsuit.
Junior high?
I'm sure high school.
High school you got your ass kicked?
I don't know if I got my ass kicked, but I certainly...
Like, how would you end up in a situation where there's, like, you know, an altercation in the first place?
Just people being jerks. Hey.
Really?
Punch you in the shoulder or something.
So you were, like, one of those guys in a movie where they would just walk by and hit you because you were kind of little.
Because that was all of us.
Did I say we?
Yeah, we were the bros.
It wasn't me, man.
I guess you could...
No, I was like you, though.
You could draw parallels, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so back to Shoes blog.
Oh, we're back on
Shoot
that.
Crispin.
Yeah.
In their Sore Thumbs blog, they've been talking about just different aspects of what happens in the enthusiast press and when you're working with PR and so on and so forth. And last week, an anonymous guy from Big Publisher, he calls himself, wrote in and gave, you know, his version of things. And I asked you to read it, Jeff, just because I'm curious. Because you're not going into PR,
right?
But you're going to be on that side of the fence.
I did read it.
But the first thing I thought of was, like, when you describing how, you know, the chefs are looking at this woman eating their food with, like, total contempt, it was funny to me because, again, in this PR person's sort of rebuttal, it's that, well, developers put a whole lot of, you know, sweat and tears into these games, and when you see just how much is going into it, it's difficult to see someone that might potentially have an uninformed or less informed, you know, a perspective on it. Babbling, and like my immediate response, I mean, what do you guys think? It's just the same. It's like, well, it's not like Eric Hartman, you know, the famous World War II ace, didn't have to know how to design and engineer a plane in order to tell people whether or not it was an effective plane. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had like 360 something, like, you know, victories. Like,
discounting your audience. It's like, game reviewers are no different than the people you're selling your games to. Like,
yeah, that's
and
right.
And so your audience isn't capable of saying whether or not the game that you've made is worth playing.
Yeah, that's like, right. That blog post kind of pissed me off, and I felt like, well, this person is totally not getting the idea that we would be looking at it as being consumer advocates, that we're being representative of the people who will buy the game, like you said, and that therefore we're eminently qualified to do it. I mean, or not everybody is, but if you've done this for certain long and you know how to write, you know how to think critically, that certainly should be enough.
Well, that blog post kind of, I mean, it implies that developers they want us to score games based on effort and not the final product. You know, that's sort of what I got from
it. It's like, what if the Iron Chef, like, you know, his sister-in-law was in the hospital last week and, you know, he just got served divorce papers, but what if he served you food that had like human feces in it, you know?
Like, probably wouldn't eat it.
Well, like, this guy who story sucks, but yeah. Are you going to
eat it? It depends. Is it a delicacy?
And that's for the this is just for what this is for is the whole score issue. That's ultimately the important thing, I believe. And like, it seemed to be the case in this blog response. I mean, Ryan, you were talking. I'm gonna make you talk. You were telling me about some issues you had with Topspin, reviewing a Topspin game.
Right. Like, a lot of the points, you know, like this guy makes in this blog post are things I hear all the time as the reviews editor here. You know, PR people calling up angry about, ultimately comes down to the score 9 times out of 10. And this specific case, I reviewed Top Spin 3 for EGM, and I gave it a C of some sort. And the PR guy...
They passed.
The PR guy called me up, and he was upset about the score, and his immediate sort of defense, he's like, well, maybe you weren't the right person to review this game, you know? And he started citing other people who had been sort of, like, positive about it from preview events.
You're just not a tennis guy.
Well, that's the thing,
though.
You
need to get your tennis guy on that game. Only a tennis expert could possibly review this game.
And this is part of the contents of this blog thing as well. And Ryan, you've got your...
That's the thing about, like, I've been playing tennis games since Virtua Tennis. You know, you wouldn't know it from looking at me, but I am a big fan of tennis video games.
You're an aficionado.
And so, you know, I have, you know, like I said to you, if you see how many hours of the original Top Spin I've got... Yeah, I know tennis games very well. And, you know, from that perspective, like, I wasn't really digging Top Spin 3 to the extent that this guy obviously wanted me to.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he kept scrambling for excuses, you know, and it was always centered around the score.
And it's also just funny to me. I mean, that is, I read that post, and he does talk about that sort of, you know, needing the press to the editors of publications to assign reviews to someone who really knows the genre.
Well, I think it's important to, like, assign a review to someone who isn't going into it with an agenda. You know,
sure.
It's somebody who, I'm not going to give an RTS game to somebody who has never played an RTS.
Yeah.
You know, like, there needs to be some familiarity and not...
But it's also just funny in the context of modern gaming when things are, like, totally not really very specialized anymore. I mean, games are pretty open to everyone. I mean, is there really a first-person shooter type of person anymore, considering the way that first-person shooter games, like, cater to the masses now? Like, do you really need to be, like, an expert in first-person shooters to play Halo and understand what's going on in Halo?
Well, every critic's going to have a different response anyway, and that's like when you were saying, Ryan, you know, you wouldn't put a non-RTS player in an RTS review. I was thinking, like, well, this is the good thing about having multiple voices respond to something. And not to pimp EGM or anything, but, I mean, just in some ideal scenario where you have, like, a podcast is more what I have in mind, where you have a chorus of people responding, that is a totally – not only is it a viable perspective, it's one that in previous parts of the whole, you know, promotional campaign for the game, I'm sure they were saying, well, we don't want to just make an RTS that's for the dude who's played every RTS that's come along. We want to show people that this is a genre that they shouldn't be frightened of or that they could get in, you know, and, like – that person's got a valid point of view, you know? I mean, that was definitely my perspective on Company Heroes when I started talking about that. Then I think it's just as cool to have someone that have the perspective of the person who knows it top to bottom, can break down every single, like, the whole the entire genealogy of system changes and just the convention differences.
Although that has its own drawbacks. I mean, I hate reading reviews where it's like a history of the genre. You know, someone who has obviously played a lot of games and they want to tell you everything about it. And you get to, like, the two lines of, like, real criticism of the game after you've received this, like, long genealogy of, you know, of what went into the games before it.
Well, if the genealogy, like, if you situate the game that you're talking about in that genealogy and it's clear the entire time that you're only bringing up the context so that you can better understand the game. But, yeah, I mean, if it's just, like... I mean, we've seen those, the dumpiest ass reviews you ever seen. It's like, I started off playing the Tokapon series when I was, like, in diapers, and then I went to Japan, and then this game came out, and then it's like suddenly you get to, like, Nika Nika Tiki, and then it's like, so that sounds more Hawaiian than Japanese. It's like,
yeah.
So what about it? Like, what do you
mean? I guess in general, it's just like, you know, you just want someone who is going to give it a chance and try to understand it and try to understand what goes into it.
And I think take it on the terms that it's presenting itself, or the developers are. You know, what were they trying to accomplish here? Did they succeed at what they were trying to do?
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's important for us to match a reviewer with somebody who gets the intention of and who the audience is, you know, so that they're coming at it with realistic expectations.
And that's difficult too. I mean, because, like, it's not necessarily a slippery slope, but I do think that down that road lies the whole fans of the genre trap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get into,
right.
Like, they say that this game was made for this person, so we got to find just this person the whole time, or even worse, you aren't that person. but you're writing your review and, you know, you're conducting your criticism trying to assume that person's perspective when you really aren't having it. You're just imagining shit.
And right.
Like, what if your gut's telling you, this is horrible, I don't like it, but you're hypothesizing the existence of a person out there who loves it? What good does that do?
That's totally different. I mean, I guess what I mean is that they understand... I'm bringing up this particular point because when I was reading some stuff about Spore, and not official reviews, but message board comments, and people were complaining about that this wasn't a hardcore enough strategy game, and I felt like, why were you expecting that? That's not what Maxis has ever done. They don't make that kind of game. If you were looking for some kind of like campaign in which you were going to get increasingly difficult AI challenges, when has Maxis ever made that game? Never. And you know, so I'm responding to that sort of thing. Like, if you're gonna review it that way, you're not reviewing the game that Maxis ever had any intention of making.
Although, in the defense of those reviews, that I've read the same stuff. I mean, the game has like from day one been sort of framed as this epic thing that tries to explore like the history of game development and different genres, and I think people like expect a lot.
Well, I won't dispute
the cover of Wired.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispute that Spore has problems. It has a lot of problems, but just that specific idea that I'm disappointed because this isn't a hardcore strategy game is like, I never thought it was going to be hardcore strategy.
But what about if you're not disappointed that's not necessarily hardcore strategy insofar as it conforms to the conventions of the strategy genre, but in that it's not. In that ultimately you don't find that it has only a fraction of the depth that early advanced looks suggested that it might be there in the game. I mean, the game has been presented at like science symposiums. Like I said, it was on the cover of Wired. It was, you know, in so many different contexts and suggesting to different people that like this, there's something for scientists here. There's something for the most casual of gamers conceivable. And like the other thing though is that I think so far, at least to my knowledge, even though that reaction has been strong among a select group of people to the point where, you know, we now know that they're on Amazon mucking with the review ratings, turning it down because of the DRM mainly, but then also citing other issues about, you know, the difference between what was delivered and their expectations.
A lot of it is Max just the DRM
is,
stuff.
Is, you know, Will Wright in the response interviews I've seen has just said, like, you know, the interviewer asked, is this the case that this game was dumbed down for a certain audience? And he'd be like, I think that's a fair statement, right? So that's the thing. It's like if on their side, if he's saying that this is going to be a game that everyone's going to play, you can give it to your kid, maybe it'll, you know, spark some interest in biology or something, then you don't turn around and try to pretend to the other person, well, at the same time, you're not getting it. This is actually the most complicated, you know, game that's ever been released. And he's just saying, like, he's just taking, you take the knocks. If you are going to, if you're stating that your game isn't for those people, then you really have to brush them aside. And so far, I think they're doing just that. It's like, well, there's 300 people, there's, you know, whatever, there's 3,000 people bitching on Amazon, but if there's fucking 5 million that buy this, you know what?
Right. Like, I mean, I think somebody pointed out that despite all the Amazon hubbub, it was still the number one game on Amazon, even with all of those.
It probably contributed to it.
Maybe. And certainly the DRM thing is a real issue, and I'd say, you know, a fuck up on EA's part, and not a cool. I don't think this has been handled well, and I think that you know, I don't know. They've come out now and said that the DRM would be in Red Alert 3, but that they were going to allow for more installs. I guess up to 5 now. But like, I personally am about to face this exact issue with my copy of Spore because I have to do a system wipe on my machine at home, which is just completely borked. So I have to reformat it and reinstall Windows, and I'm going to lose my Spore install. And I've already installed it twice.
Say you've had three, you could still contact
them. Three times.
I don't know. I personally find it offensive to have to call somebody and say, excuse me, I used all three of my installs, and I swear I'm not a criminal. I bought this game. I don't have my receipt, but I did buy it. You know, I hate being treated like a criminal or with suspicion, and just buying a game that automatically assumes that you might be the type of person to just spread it all over the internet or give it to all of your friends or something.
I mean, we all get why they're doing it. Everybody in this room gets why.
Sure. Yeah.
That's not in dispute, and we don't want their game stolen either.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's important to the industry, but there's got to be other ways, and certainly you know, companies like Valve have figured out other ways in which there doesn't have to be this kind of draconian 20th.
The irony is that Spore was leaked to the internet before it ever hit retail.
And people bitching on Amazon are most likely the ones that stole it.
Right. Never have bought it in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think that those, you know, you can dismiss those morons.
Yeah.
But the DRM issue is real for sure.
Yeah.
After you install it three times, you just can't ever install it again?
No, you got to call a number and get
that's
more
like,
installs.
That's
like a Windows install. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had to do that? Like call
yes.
Microsoft?
It's like trying to disconnect cancel your Xbox Live subscription. Try that one day.
Or your GameTap subscription.
I brought this up before, but it's difficult.
Really?
It's a lot more drama than I want, you know. It's like,
can
it's
you
the
not
whole
just
situation.
Cancel over the system?
Like, you know when you want to, like, no. If you're going to cancel your cable, you recently switched to another, like, cable, internet, and TV cable provider,
mm-hmm.
and you have the whole confrontational thing where, like, yeah. why are you sure? What can we do to make you not want it? It's like, no, yeah. fucking cancel it. I wish, can I just press a button? Why do I have to talk to you? So, I mean.
I just got rid of HBO that way, and I did it online, and it was awesome. I didn't have to, like, justified at all, and I had it like ready in my head because I thought for sure I'm gonna have to.
It's like breaking up with the girlfriend.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I'm sorry, you got Sopranos is over and The Wire's over, and the new shows don't appeal to me, and I'm sorry.
I think it'd be fun.
I'll come
though,
back like, after the vampire show starts.
To call,
but then no one called me on it.
I think it'd be funny though to call and be like, I want to get rid of HBO. Oh, sir, can we ask you why? Well, how familiar are you with season 5 of The Wire?
Yes, yeah. Really specific.
I mean, yeah. Spoiler alert, but right. Yeah.
Yeah, what you did to Proposition Joe, I just wasn't down with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that would be video game fan territory then.
Yeah.
I'm sure, actually, it probably happens.
Oh, I'm sure it happens
all the
time.
If we have a listener that actually works in, like, whatever quality assurance, what would the department be for HBO?
Oh, don't you think?
Write us in.
Somebody calls HBO probably every day, yeah. You know, after some episode of whatever, and it's like, how could you have possibly done that to Joey? Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Sorry, sir. So I'm just working in circulation.
You, Jeff, and yep. Robert have been playing Spore, and I know, Anthony, you started last night.
I did.
So I want to hear about the game itself, DRM and all that shit aside.
Haven't you been playing, too?
Anthony got it for me for my birthday last night, and sorry, my phone's ringing. He got it for me for my birthday last night, and I didn't have time to.
You should take it
to play it, and but I'm.
It was on the phone.
You should take
tonight.
It. That'd be
it was
great.
Unavailable, which means it's the usual.
It's the California like marketer. Political cause calling to tell you to vote no on Proposition 7 or whatever.
It's some usual shit. It's yeah. probably like it's like. What is the difference between a pit bull and a hockey mom? A pit bull believes in evolution and climate change.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Okay, so back to Spore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I've only...
Let's start with Robert. We can't trust you anymore.
Spore's awesome! Hey, I'm the one who dips their DRM.
I'm joking.
I've played through the cellular stage and I'm like at the end of the creature stage. So I just got it on Sunday night and I have not been able to play as much as I would like. So far though, I have no idea. I don't think that I could possibly like say that I have a grasp on it enough to see how like the reviews stack up. I do really enjoy playing with the creator though, which I never got to download. I never got around to doing that. And I've spent most of my time doing that, mm-hmm. so it's pretty enjoyable. I'd be interested to see like what else is there in the game to do. Like right now, I'm in the creature stage, and I'm like hunting for fruit, and you know, following my family across the whole geographic area to find my next nest, and then befriending people. I haven't really had any fights or anything because I'm an herbivore, being max chill.
So you're running from predators or anything?
I ran into one predator who destroyed me. It was like some giant creature.
They do that, yeah, epic. Random gigantic
yeah.
creatures.
Yeah, yeah. But mostly I've been, you know, dancing and singing and giving peace a chance.
How does that make you feel?
With a lot of different animals. It's pretty fun at first, and then I do it like a million times, and I'm like, I think I want to kill some of these animals.
Do you know what's going to happen to you yet if you keep evolving that way as a peace-loving, hacky-sack little...
I don't
birthday
know.
Hippie dude. Do you want to spoil
it?
Or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, spoil it.
Because this is what I did, and it actually was a little disconcerting to me.
Yeah.
If you go along, whatever path you go along, when you get to the next phase of the game, so you're in creature and you're going to go into... No, you're in tribal now, I think.
No, he's in creature.
You're in creature. You're going to go into tribal. Okay. it starts choosing for you what kind of society you are based on your actions. So if you continue along these lines of being the peace-loving, I love everybody, I'm going to make friends with everybody, soon you will be a religious zealot.
This is the, like, even in the manual, it was clear that there are basically three affiliations in each stage. And in the first, it starts off, like you, Robert, was saying, herbivore, omnivore, and carnivore. And then it seems as though there's an equivalent choice along every, you know, in every different phase, to the point when you get to the space phase, it's like religion, economy, or like, you know, warrior sort of scenario.
Yeah. You have the chance to influence it and go in a different direction. But if you pursue a particular way, you're locked into that. Yeah. So what bothered me when I got to that stage, and I said this on some other podcast, it must have been the Wild podcast, but I pursued that peace-loving way, and then when I got to the Civ phase and I had to, you know, to win that and go on to space, I had to convert all the other cities. And the way you do that is very aggressive. You know, and it's a funny animation. It's nicely done. You know, a giant holographic image of you towers over the opposing city, and you're sort of speaking with megaphones, basically. You know, and you know they eventually get converted to your religion. And I thought, like, well, fuck. I didn't want to be like some religious despot. I was preaching love and peace.
It makes sense. I mean, pacifism was a religious idea historically before it was ever
Go ahead.
Go on.
I'm just saying that I would say that taking the violent approach to me rather speaks of the founding of most religions and stuff like that. A lot of them are founded on a bunch of conflict and early tribal warfare and stuff like that. So it seemed to me like in your tribal phase, if you were all aggressive, it'd kind of be, I mean, like, you know,
yeah.
Israel.
Right, I thought, like, you know, we'd all hang, and then they just, like, want to be with me. They'd convert to my Civ just because I was cool.
Welcome to Planet Love.
Exactly.
Yeah, hosted maybe you'd be like a Jeff.
This is the interesting thing about the game, I think, for me, is that, like, when I played, I want to look at its implicit messages. And, you know, when we talked to Will Wright last, I asked him what he saw with implicit messages in the game. It's not like, I'm not expecting, it's not like if the messages are good, then I like the game. I'm just like, irrespective of review scores and all that shit, I just want to see what it says. And even looking at the manual, I started to see some, like, for example, you know, after you get to the spacefaring stage, you're able to basically take your build and re-roll it more or less by adopting the religion or the culture of some other thing. It's almost like you then become whatever they are. So it's like I could convert to Jeff's world or something. And an implicit message there is that at least when a species gets to this, you know, spacefaring stage, that there's, you know, I don't believe in, like, genetic determinism, but what this suggests is that there's no longer any relation or no longer any restrictions whatsoever or shaping force from their history and their genes. And in this case, we'd give you some examples, like, say, a predilection for interspecies violence or any of these kind of things. It's like you just, like, wish them away and you become whatever you want. And another example would be, like, if you're an herbivore, you're immediately becoming like the Hare Krishnas of the world. And it's like, meanwhile, we know there are plenty of herbivorous species that kill members of their own. They fight to the death. I mean, like, look at like rams and stuff.
They just don't want to eat them
until they break their necks.
Well, you can't, and you can do that in the game, though. As an herbivore, you can kill the other species. You just don't eat them. But you can kill them.
That's true.
Right. But I mean, if you're saying as you progress into the next stages, then the natural.
Well, if you kill enough of them, then the game will say you are a predator. Mm-hmm. You're an herbivore, but you're a predator.
What happens, say, for example, if you do like Robert and you start off as a carnivorous creature and then you end up changing your affiliations as you go into the tribal or more likely the civilization phase, and you're like, well, I'm going to be an herbivore now. Eating probably doesn't even figure in the civilization phase, I'm guessing.
I don't think it does at that point. Yeah, it's another game.
Yeah.
Right. Then it's basically how you're taking over the other civilizations. Mm-hmm. And at any point, you have the option of how to do it. So, you know, you are making choices that matter. But it's the simplicity of the choices that at times bothered me.
I know the answer to this question just from the reviews and stuff I've read. But, like, say, what if you wanted to experiment and you want to lay your egg in a nest of another creature? You want to basically try to become a cuckoo or something like that. I mean, there's nothing like that, right? I mean, it's just no.
My understanding, though, is that's I could be wrong, but I think that's something that unlocks if at a certain point after you've been in space for a while. You're talking about like interspecies.
No, in that case, a specific like the cuckoo bird and what the term cuckold comes from is the bird will lay its egg,
right.
And its egg is colored to resemble that of whatever, you know, species nest it's laying it in. And then the because of the way that you know the other bird works, it's not like based on recognition of its own offspring so much as if something hatches in its nest and it takes care of it. It's therefore its own offspring. And of course, you'll see a cuckoo bigger than the host bird, and it pushes out. Not only that, it's further evolved so that once it hatches prior to the other eggs in the nest, and then its first act is to push those eggs out of the nest so they
fall
and crack. And then so basically what's happening is this other bird's raising it. So I'm just saying situations
like
that.
That's not really that different from the way it really is in the game. Because, I mean, when you create a new version of yourself, it can be completely different from everything that came before in what you've done genetically. And then when you hatch, it's just you. You know, the other the other people are around, but I mean, you are in the driver's seat. You might as well be the cuckoo bird. You know,
right?
Yeah.
So there's another.
Yeah.
So what else about this?
Do like the creators a lot. So all of those tools, and I do think that's where a lot of the longevity for a lot of the players is going to come from in this game. It's just people who like to make cool shit and will keep making it. So I think some people are going to take those tools and that's going to be the game for them. And they'll probably get a lot out of it that way. Cause the tools are pretty amazing. And what I liked was that at every stage, there was another tool to play with basically. So, and you know, like, I actually didn't know, I guess just from not paying attention during previews, that, like, I could design my own plane or I could design my own boat. I was surprised when that stuff came along, and that stuff's pretty neat, so.
I do think that maybe Spore suffers from having been, like, way overexposed in that, like, every aspect of the game was revealed to people who were following it way before anyone saw it. It would have been interesting to see. I mean, we talked about this before, I think. But like, what if we didn't know about anything
true,
after
and
the
it
creature
just,
stage
it just showed
and just kept
up.
On going?
Right,
and which would be the case for a lot of people that pick this game up.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was thinking the other day when I was playing it, like it feels like too much in a way. Like it was over ambitious from the start. I mean, we knew it was from the start. They knew it was from the start, and then you know they did have to kind of scale it back at the end. But I feel even. You know, and I actually asked Lucy Bradshaw this when I interviewed her, was that, you know, like, couldn't you have taken any one of these phases and gone laterally out and just made a game out of that phase? That it's almost like, it almost feels like each one is just not quite as great as it could have been if that one got the loving treatment that the whole project did. And yeah, I feel like you really feel the... for me, like the tribal and the Civ state, and I know this is not a minority opinion, are the ones that feel like kind of like cobbled together, you know, and you're just sort of waiting to get into space. And space to me feels much more like the game that Will actually wanted to make the whole time. And that may not be true, but that's how it feels to me, that like, okay, this was all sort of the prologue to get out here into the thing that he's really into.
And if you want that, you can start the game in the space stage.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you can though. Last night when I started it, it was like, I went to go check out if I could play the phases. And yesterday it said that I had played enough of the creature phase to unlock the civilization phase.
Yeah.
So
that's the first time through.
The first time through,
you have to play each phase a certain amount of time. You don't even have to finish it before it unlocks the next one.
Let me play devil's advocate and ask this. Like when The Sims came out, I think it made a lot of sense to a great many people that the idea that you could, you know, have these little humans that have romantic relationships and mansions and all these things, people could immediately identify with it, even if it wasn't like the typical gamers, the ones that get angry that Wii Fit exists and this kind of shit. But you kind of hypothesize, you're like, yes, I see why this is going to, why people are going to latch onto this, and I predict success for this. Do you think that Spore has that same ability that people are going to say, I want to make weird creatures and spaceships and stuff?
I think so.
I do. I think it's already doing
it's
that.
There's already been like 10 million creatures that have been made.
I don't see it being the same kind of like cultural phenomenon, because I don't see what stories you can tell with Spore, like compared to like specifically girls who play The Sims. Mm-hmm. Like every like Super Sims fan I've ever known, I have friends who are really into it. They're all girls and they love like the domestic narrative that they make with The Sims. They love like creating situations for people where they're like humiliated or have like a romance and it goes awry or whatever. And those kinds of stories, which like people relate to so much, are not going to be happening in Spore. The Spore stories are much more guy stories. You know, stories about like aliens coming to conquer your planet or like battles or growing bigger and stronger, you know.
But conceding that we're stereotyping women here, like say you want to,
yes, let's
they like domesticity.
Say you want to anthropomorphize Spore in that same way, and what you just described about the war guys going out and conquering the universe and stuff is totally different than what you said. You just had, I mean, yours was the, and Jeff's too. I mean, you guys are like the happy joy stuff, and I mean, I can imagine all your characters going like, booba. shit like that. So is that, I mean,
I don't mean to like divide it into like male and female or like aggression versus
I think what you're getting at in one way is that it's not really at this point in the game's life, it is not the kind of sandbox game that The Sims is or that Sim City was really. Like, you know, it's very goal oriented in each phase. So there isn't this sort of just like breadth to you and the phone, man.
Oh,
okay,
shit.
Okay, get it this time. Let's see who it is.
Let's
see who it is.
Put it on speaker.
Yeah, we all want to hear.
Let's not do that. It's not a good time. I don't feel good about that.
We have your erotic message of the day.
Stereotype.
Oh, Sean, I just want to stroke you. Thank
Love
you.
Larry.
Actually, we were stereotyping. And this is for those two listeners that think I can't contain myself. Right now, I've made a choice. I'm like, you know what? We've been fairly serious. We can have, like, a joking digression. So, like, just chill the fuck out. No, but last night, we were stereotyping genders based on gameplay, but in a really weird way. Talking about playing, what is this fucking thing called?
Smarty Pants.
Every time you play it. And there's a tug-of-war game in it. And whenever this one comes up, basically what happens is you're fighting over who gets to answer the question. So it's called an I Know It card. So say, for example, Melissa buzzes in first, and I play my I Know It card. I don't immediately get to answer it. We then, you know, wage a tug-of-war. And the way it's played is by holding the Wiimote sort of like a peanut and jerking it, you know. So we're playing him. Every time, like, I would just, like, win that shit in an instant. And Melissa would be like, what the hell? Like, what do I got to do? And I'd, like, look at her and, like, it was, like, that look in my eye, you know? And I was like, this is what you got to do. And so, like, Robert and Sarah were having, like, the same discussion because she always loses to that.
Yeah.
But then we started, like, stereotyping the other way. And we're like, but, yeah, but, like, you know, you got the advantage in the games with, like, rapid fire button pressing and stuff. You know what I mean? So there we go.
Yeah.
Back to Spore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's probably more just what you're saying, that like as of right now, Spore is not really that kind of sandbox that would allow you to set up these kinds of situations that people love
and
to
just
set up.
And just let it roll and see what happens. I mean, the only sandbox is really the creators itself.
Yeah, but I could definitely see Spore getting there. I mean, The Sims was a long project. I mean, it was added to over and over and over again.
So. Right, that's what my suspicion is that they will see what people are trying to do now and evolve it from there. Mm. And I bet that they will sort of maybe like go granular with certain modes, like the super popular ones. Like if it ends up being creatures, like all everybody plays, because they'll be able to tell, then they'll do something to just expand that part out.
You know? As for the popularity, what I think it could leverage is just this idea that, I mean, just customizability is huge right now. I mean, not just the ability to customize things, but like little anthropomorphic doodads and trinkets and stuff. I mean, if you walk around our floor and you see how many little either like vinyl toy animals and things there are, or you know, for girls,
you know,
like,
that's not
Hello,
like
Hello Kitty type stuff, and
that's mostly Shane.
This is
not like, you know, America or anything. That's the office of a video game website. Offices typically have like their cubicles full of tiny like toys from Japan.
I use that because it's an example close to hand. If we go to Walmart and we walk through Walmart and we go through stationery aisles, we go through the kids' backpacks, we go through, I mean, just the difference. You go through the DVD section and look at the kind of like cartoons that have been coming out and stuff. I do think, I mean, that there's a case like, yeah, in that case, like Urban Vinyl or something small, group of people do it. But I think as far back as, like, you know, Hello Kitty and shit, and Sanrio's been huge for the longest time among mainstream America. You know, there's Sanrio shops and malls in Tulsa or wherever. That people like that sort of thing. And I'm sure... I mean, look at also, like, you, why do you think I'm lying? What's this?
No.
I was laughing at him trying to quietly chew his Chex Mix. It has nothing to do with you.
And I'm fucking jealous,
he just has
man.
Us like a kid eating candy in church or that. Something. Yeah. Don't notice me.
I wish I could eat such a big handful of that right now.
I remember sitting in church, like, a lifesaver. You basically get it down to just, like, a tiny razor thing, and you keep, like, showing your friend. You're, like really surreptitiously just be like, oh. Just like show how, like, basically making a game, trying to entertain yourself.
I don't think I ever made it past like 20 seconds with a lifesaver in my mouth before eating it. Yeah.
You haven't been to the churches I've been to, man.
I bet.
Well, you mean you can't resist but to bite into it?
Yeah, I can't.
This was specifically that church where the incarcerated former pastor would phone in from the prison to talk about, because he had bombed an abortion clinic and would talk about all the wonderful things and to tell us about the various, you know, disciples that and
to ask you guys to get some money up to send him some cigarettes.
Okay, so maybe to finish the sport thing, my point was just that, like, people like cute little things.
Yeah,
sure they do.
So maybe on those
and spore
grounds,
is a cute little thing, says oneup.com's Sean Elliott.
No, it's a game in which you make cute little things.
Yeah, okay. Go look at the things Alice has made. It is all cute little things.
Yeah.
My creatures have been unabashedly cute. I haven't made anything very gross.
Are they all herbivores?
Well, even the gross shit looks cute, right? I mean, you can have the train of animals, like...
I guess. I've seen some really ugly
stuff. There's some bits of nasty stuff.
But I guess you're true. The art style of it kind of keeps everything kind of looking kind of dopey in a cute way or something like that, even when it's all aggressive.
It is interesting to see, to me, like, the way they try to unify everything in Spore by controlling, like, parts. Mm-hmm. It's like you can really do a lot with what they give you. It's sort of like the Miis and... on the Wii, except for, like, way, way more options.
Yeah.
They give you these standard parts, and then it's like you're amazed by what people do with them.
Yeah, that's the thing is that, you know, like, I'll be thinking when I'm using the creator, like, well, maybe I've kind of hit the limit of what this thing can do. And that's so wrong. Because when you go up onto the Sporepedia and you see the stuff people have made, it's like, how the hell did they even think to do that?
Yeah.
You know, I really think that's the cool part of the game is that the tools that they gave for people to make stuff that they could never make. You know, they don't have those kind of skills to use professional 3D software, that kind of thing. It's really a cool thing.
You think we'll see a market where there's, like, specialist sport creators that then, like, try to sell their stuff on eBay?
Oh, God. Yeah, that sounds
Would that work? I mean, can't you just... Don't you just share it? I mean...
You don't have to if you don't want to. If you think that you're, like, the... Who's the glass-blowing dude? The Chihuly of fucking Spore.
Nobody makes a spaceship like me.
And then you put that shit on eBay. You could be like, sign it, you know? Like,
Yeah,
you probably could do that, couldn't you?
When I was listening to Will Wright on NPR, he was talking about how the creature creator was like their flagship thing in the sense that, you know, the whole thing they were trying to emphasize on NPR was that he wants it to not be like a teaching tool. He doesn't think that Spore is something to teach you about evolutionary biology or anything like that, but he wants it to, he referred to it as it shouldn't fill a bucket, but it should spark a flame to, like, make people want to learn about, like, that's his goal.
Right.
I mean, his goal is like, oh, maybe I'll go pick up a book about evolutionary biology.
I mean, like, if Carl Sagan became who he was because he grew up watching Buck Rogers, you know, I mean, that's about that level of, I don't want to knock that, but I mean, that's really the level of correlation. I don't want to knock it because it could really, I mean, there's a whole generation of people that grew up in the post-war era. They're absolutely fascinated with space travel, you know, and it had to do with, like, the pulp, sci-fi pulp, and, you know, in earlier eras before that.
To be fair, at his speech at the Spore launch event, where Will Wright said, like, a big reason that he got into doing it, all this and interest in science and all the research he did was because he watched, like, or he read sci-fi books growing up.
Right, you know, and you know, like, he's, I think, a year or two older than me, and he talked a lot about the, you know, NASA and stuff on television when we were boys, when... you know, people our age were boys in the late 60s, you know, to seeing that the landing on the moon was, like, unbelievable. And, I mean, imagine being 9, 10 years old
the Challenger blowing
and seeing that shit, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, hey. I would. You know, I want to play. I want to play a game like Spore that's like about evolution, but where you have no direct control over the appearance of the species. The only way you do it is by like punishing the animal.
I
want you to have a really long neck, so all your food is way up here. Come get it.
Yeah, it's kind of a reversing in Spore, right? You can design a really long neck, and then you can reach the fruit that they did put up there in the game.
You would control selection pressures. That would also be like that would be other creatures that share the ecosystem as well and stuff. But like, everything you're talking about,
or you just add some horrible predator to see what happens. I mean, I'm sure that this is something that would be so incredibly difficult to make, you know. And I'm sure it's something that they were thinking of at the time, but. Yeah.
It's time for a candy break.
Right, and then it might be time for a real break. Yes, really? says the crew.
Well, should we take a real break first?
Let's go out with a candy break before we take a break. Richie Churchill sent us buckets of toxic waste.
Can't you just pass out, like, good-looking candy?
These were made in Pakistan. And there's a warning on it. It says consuming more than one within a brief time may cause irritation to the mouth.
Dude.
Sensitive individuals should not consume this project.
I'm sensitive.
All right, eat your toxic waste.
Hold on.
We got a minute. Everyone.
It says 15 seconds you're total waste, 30 seconds you're a crybaby, 45 seconds you're a toxy wannabe.
What the hell is it?
60
open it up
seconds.
And eat it. Come on, go.
Full toxic.
All right.
God.
That's not bad. It tastes like a penny, but it's not bad.
toxic waste. Did you guys all put it in your mouth?
Hell no.
It's not that bad.
I'm doing it.
It's just kind of.
Oh, God.
Come on.
Oh, come on.
That's disgusting.
He didn't even make it to 15 seconds.
Jeez.
Man. You're below a total wuss.
I'm not going to. I know I am.
I'm past this.
Yeah, I'm half. Now it's just delicious.
Now
candy.
I know why. I'm never eating this shit again.
Let's find out if it's true about more than.
Yeah, we'll be back.
At EA,
after
I'm going to get some real candy. we'll be back after a break.
And we're back.
Robert is volunteered to eat another bit of toxic waste along with a handful of cheddar Chex Mix at the same time.
And I call it simul-eating.
Well, he does
that. It must be great to have around in the dorms, Robert.
Totally.
Hey, Robert, will you eat this piece of shit?
So okay. While he's doing that,
I have an experimental palate.
Yeah.
So Richie Churchill again gave us the toxic waste. I got some. There's more stuff that I've been trying to get the rest of you to try, but you're all afraid to. Ryan, I tried to get you to try some stuff from GR Remco from the Netherlands. He sent us some awesome. There's something Das Vagens or something. It's like school buses that are like three layers of licorice and gummy. And
that sounds good.
They're really good.
I like school buses.
Both of the things, and then he sent something else. I forget what it's called. I have them upstairs, like the brain something, and they're both like really good. So
I'm just nervous about trying anything that you like specifically give me.
It's like clicking on your link.
Like I'll go through your collection and I'll select something, but when you're like, "Hey, Robert, try this," that's usually a warning sign.
Wait, this is toxic waste.
Yeah, he's just the background for us. So Robert James from Belfast, Northern Ireland, hooked us up with some great stuff. He's also known as Drunk Messiah on 1UP.com. Thank you. Nason gave us the mother load of stuff. I mean, so generous. Keep eating, Robert. You're just
Robert's liking it.
This is a duet. So thanks again, Nason. That was, like, super cool of you. Then from Hawaii, from the Big Island on Hilo, from Kazumi Takemasa. We got some really good cookies with chocolate on them.
Oh, was that fancy gold box?
Yeah.
And that was nice.
Oh, damn.
That was super good as well. So hopefully I didn't miss anyone. I have some other – actually, here's another one right here.
I'm going to miss this, man. The free candy.
Oh, wait. No, I got all the ones that I got for her. So thanks again for your generosity. And Anthony, give us some music. You weren't supposed to be eating. You're supposed to be giving us some music.
Bienvenidos a GFW Radio. Viva la Brodio. ¿Dónde están?
We're losing control
all right,
here.
All right.
While we're doing thanks,
I also got like a. Oh, you go ahead and give.
Well,
your
I just I got to thank. I want a personal thanks to Terry Scooter Nguyen, 1UP.com, my former coworker at Computer Gaming World back in the old days, because he gave me a very generous parting, lovely parting gift. for my time here. He gave me a 50th anniversary edition of The Lord of the Rings. And yeah, I brought it down here. See this leather bound volume? One.
That's pretty
Isn't
rad.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Very nice present. And but I brought down the description of what's in it. Finest edition ever offered, according to them. but anyway, there was this one particular item. I wanted to know if this meant anything to any of you. Color insert showing leaves from the Book of Mazarbul.
Well,
does that mean anything to you?
No, but even my geek ass is laughing at that.
Whoa. Whoa, that's a fancy book.
You see it what is. I'm talking
it's
about?
Gold
it's like gold
leaf.
That's
gold
that's
leaf.
Like Bible
it's nicer
fancy.
Than a Bible, yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of like a Bible.
It's like the nerd Bible.
It kind of is.
It's not
like
the Bible
because it is the Bible. anyway, so thanks, Cooper.
Very nice.
Very nice of you.
And yet you were upset about your religious spore civilization.
What? There's a difference.
No, but he doesn't worship a deity. He worships a fantasy franchise.
Exactly. It's different.
Yeah. Whoa.
Right, get your grubby fingers off it, Ryan.
That's what it comes down to.
What used to be a book is now
a fantasy franchise.
You're soiling my book. Okay, let's move on.
I wanted to also say thanks to all the people I met at PAX. It was now a couple weeks ago. But
I heard you were kind of Jesus-like there while we're on this topic. I heard you could just kind of put your hands out and people would touch them.
There's the whole, like, when people would ask, like, so what's it like being a pseudo-celebrity? And it's like, for one, I have to fucking make up the answer as I go because that's a fucking weird question to answer. also, like, I mean, yeah, it's like, well, I guess it's what it would be like to be a star of you know, like the real world or something, except if you weren't, you're only like, you know, 1/1000th of their, you know, notoriety or whatever. But yeah, people there were super cool. They had a lot of them came bearing gifts too. So I would feel guilty walking away at times. I just have like stuff coming out of my bag, out of my, my shoulder bag.
Very flattering.
Good stuff from Devin Lowe from Korea, the banana chips. I didn't get to share it. I ate it all when I was there, but like, it's like, basically it was like packing foam. Packing peanuts, but they tasted like banana, and then some other.
That sounds great.
And I didn't. Oh, it's upstairs. Someone from Australia. I should have brought his thing. He gave me a kangaroo nutsack.
What?
It's like it's basically the bosack of a kangaroo that you can put change in or something. And at first, I was like, okay, I'm cool with this because there's no way this is really a kangaroo nutsack. And the reason I care about that is like I don't want kangaroos getting killed for their. Their scrote, like.
But then you realize that kangaroos were killed for more than just their scrote.
Right.
There are various novelty products made out of kangaroos.
And that novelty products being made out of kangaroos doesn't make me feel too good either.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the sentiment, and I now am the owner of a kangaroo but nutsack, and I can put
Are
whatever.
Are you putting your change in there?
I've been putting weed in it pretty much.
Is it big enough to put your nuts in it?
No. What?
Dude, what kind of question is that?
I mean, Robert.
Because then you could have like a kangaroo.
Take your glasses off, dude, and let's figure this out. Like you're at home. Like. Would my nuts fit in this nut? We were also last night at dinner. We were talking. I was talking about the size of testes in male mammals, and you guys thought you and your wife and Tina and. Well, Anthony, you believe me, but you thought I was making this stuff up as I went, that I seemed to know so much about sexual morphology and dimorphism.
Well, don't you remember Robert's totally, like non-glasses moment when you were talking about that fish that, like, slowly attaches to the female, and then the fish.
Okay, let's build it right back up there. Because we have two people here, Jeff and Ryan, that weren't aware of it. So what I was talking about with balls is that generally the larger – mammals' testicles are the more, like how do you say it? Like it's not just the more sexual partners that he has because in the case, but like outside of a circumstance like a harem. So for example, if a male gorilla has exclusive access to a set of females, the male gorillas also have minuscule genitals compared to other primates, humans, chimpanzees, bonobos. And this is because it's like if they're having intercourse with one of the females in their harem, they have no worry that they're going to be cuckolded or that because some other gorilla would have had to beat him in a fight and he would have caught him and they would have, you know, fought until he chased him off or killed him. Whereas in animals that just spread their seed all over the place, there's a great likelihood that the female had already just had intercourse, maybe even an hour or minutes before, you know. So it's basically like a war for the biggest load. And
an arms race, if you will.
And then I kind of comment on the side that humans are actually fairly large among primates, which indicates that we're not necessarily as faithful as our society wants to tell us in this and that. But that aside, there's a special case of a certain deep sea fish. This happens in a few different types of species, but basically the male is a very, very, very tiny. Female's a large, you know, benthic fish, super exotic looking. And the male will attach itself to the female, and then eventually it just becomes part of her body, just absorbs the male. Circulatory system becomes one, and then it's just a living sperm sac that hangs on her. And Robert actually
I was just
speculated
wondering
on what this moment of combination
is. Yeah, because I mean, you hear that and you're like, God, that sounds such like a horrible type of sex. But I wonder if for the male fish, the whole grafting you into the female body for however long that takes, if that isn't just like one long moment of like,
for forever.
I'm being grafted into you. Oh, I'm losing myself.
He was doing this at higher volume than that.
In a public restaurant.
It wasn't like a nice restaurant. It was a bar.
It was pretty nice, man.
Yeah.
By Berkeley standards.
It was
standards.
In Berkeley.
By
Come
Berkeley
on.
Standards, it was nice.
The other day I was in Berkeley and I said a cuss word and someone with me was like, what's wrong with your kids around here? And I'm like, they're in Berkeley. What the fuck? Like, they've heard all
did
this.
They not, did they say this as they were stepping over someone shooting up? Like, fucking downtown Berkeley is like, yeah. They're, like, yeah. Even we come out of the place last night. How many people did we see that were, like, bedding up for the night and probably getting ready to,
I saw
like,
that.
I, for one.
Or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, can't deal with the real estate prices around here. I just camp out under a tree, pee in a jar.
I
plug my
aren't
plasma
we paying you
screen
enough for those articles?
The,
is that the free? Yeah, how bad the freelance rates are, Dave?
I was thinking.
No comment.
I was thinking. How long have you been with your wife, Robert? Like counting
since
when
we
she
were
was
16.
A girlfriend. You got some small balls, I bet.
Oh, that's fighting words here on GFW Radio.
So I was wondering about fitting him into the
small bald Bobito.
Ouch.
They called him.
So
I'm just
before
kidding.
We have a bunch of questions.
No, yeah,
for you, Jeff. Since you're leaving.
Yeah.
And like I want to get to those. I just also want to say thanks again to the people at PAX that said hi. And like there were a lot of people that were super interesting and I wanted to get to know them. One guy in particular had a really interesting story. He lived in DC. He got busted for some stuff there, but then basically decided he was gonna change his life. He moved out to Vegas and started a program for troubled youth. Super interesting guy. But the problem was is that there's so many different people and everyone's asking questions and stuff. It's a really unnatural way to talk to to try to basically acknowledge everyone, but then follow up, have any kind of follow up conversation. But so, yeah, so all those people, I hope I didn't seem like a dick or anything.
What was the dumbest question you got?
I don't want to pick on anyone. I mean, like, there's like the most awkward one, to be honest. Like, I was leaving.
Can you be my big brother?
It was close. It was like,
Sean Elliott, can you be my big brother?
It was whether or not my balls could fit inside the. No, it was like just as I was leaving the guy. I'm not even going to go there. I liked everyone there. Let's go on to questions for you, Jeff.
Yeah, all right. Okay. How do we want to handle this? I've got like 8,000 of them. I got a lot of questions.
Well, you don't
need a moderator.
You're supposed to pick the best that
I know.
You
well,
to answer.
The thing is that
you don't bring in a 50-page
and
tome.
Then flip through them on air.
Yes,
we have not 5 minutes of dead science. Huh.
Is that really the entire thread?
No, not that one.
Anthony's gonna have
no.
To
I got some. I got some highlighted here, and they do kind of go around a general theme.
I've never seen GAF printed out. It's
no, this
weird.
Isn't GAF. This is OneUp.com.
Oh, okay.
We don't print off GAF.
We don't print off GAF.
Oh.
No, there was a GAF thread too, but the questions are very much sort of a theme. So. I do want to kind of say the same thing Sean just said in a way, which is that there's no way, obviously, I can answer any more than a few of these. And there's like, I don't know, a few hundred of these. So I just want to thank everybody for writing in and asking these questions. And I won't be able to answer them all. I'll try to go online and answer some of these in that thread in writing so I could get to more of them. But if I didn't answer your question, I apologize. Don't hate me. So a lot of them are why I decided to do this. Did I always want to be a game developer? And this, so this was my secret dream that I'm finally fulfilling.
So I think I could probably answer a bunch of those questions kind of all at once if I just sort of, you know, blab for a minute or two and just stop me when it's getting boring. Also, I did blog about this, so a lot of the reasoning why I did this is on the
blog. Give me the questions then. I'll find some ones
find
that
some good ones.
Cover new territory.
Okay. But just to go over the old territory in general.
No.
Oh, look out there. No, this was not my secret dream to develop for The Sims or to develop games at all. This just felt like the right thing at the right time for me. We've been over how fucking long I've been at Ziff Davis, which is 17 years, which is a long goddamn time to be anywhere. And yes, the end of the magazine did influence this for me. That was, you know, I've said it before, and it's no big secret that, you know, was pretty fucking devastating to me, and it still is. That was very much what my career was about here. So when the magazine closed, you know, I was kind of at a loss. You know, when you think of yourself as a magazine guy and then you don't have a magazine, it really, my career changed at that point. Then I became a web journalist, and it took a sort of a little while for me to get my head around that this is what I do for a living now. I'm a guy on a website, and that's fine.
Oh, no.
That's fine if you're ready for it, but I wasn't ready for it. All of a sudden, this was my job. And there's a big difference between being the editor-in-chief of a magazine and a group of us who were together every month putting out this product that we were proud of, and being the editor-in-chief of a door, which is what I was. I was the editor-in-chief of one door of a larger website, and it was a door that we didn't have a whole lot of control over, really. And that was, you know, I think had I hung on... we would have seen some good changes to that page, and I think we still will, or you guys still will get to there. But for me, it was time for me to move on. And in terms of The Sims and then that move, that has a lot to do with Rod Humble, actually, who was on our podcast, who I befriended as a result of that podcast. I just thought he was a totally brilliant, smart, funny guy. And, you know, those are the kind of people that we like to be around. And when I started thinking about, well, shit, what am I going to do next? I thought, well, who would I like to work with? And he was right at the top of the list. It wasn't because he's making games and that's what I want to do. It's just because I just was looking at the people who felt
he could have been a trash
contacts
man,
in my
and
life.
And you would have jumped on the back of his
I
truck.
Might have. Delivering trash with Rod Humple would be an awesome
delivering
job.
Delivering trash?
Delivering trash. Here's your trash, sir.
It'd be like minute work,
you ordered
two.
Three bags, right? Here's your shit.
You got any more seafood shells?
Smells pretty bad, sir. Enjoy. And picking up trash would have been great with him too. No, but
I have a question on top of that,
yes,
which
sir.
Is, do you feel like you had to go into development because there's just not anywhere for a guy of your stature in the whole writing about games thing to go?
Well,
like, are there just no options?
Yeah,
anymore
I do, and I would take out the of my stature part.
Well,
I
mean, someone who spent 17 years doing it.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, like the guy that worked at McDonald's for 17 years.
Oh.
Right. Then what's he going to do, go to Arby's? Like, oh, shit, now I'm here.
I got turned down to wear the fucking
that's
clown
how it would have been
for 8 years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, what do? I walk into IGN, and I'm editor-in-chief there, and then day one, I got some clown saying, like, we got to get page views up on the PC coverage. I'm supposed to be going, fuck! This is what I just got away from. So, yeah. You know, I mean, but the truth is that, and I really feel this way, and I'm biased because I spent most of my adult life here. I do feel like for, you know, every other thing about that we have problems with, you know, at Ziff Davis and the money and all that, then just in terms of the staff and the content we do, you know, I feel like it, for me personally, it is the best. So where would I go that it would be more satisfying just in terms of the people I work with, in terms of, you know, the creative energy? Like, it just, I felt like it was going to be a step down if I did the same thing anywhere else. So I really did feel like there was nowhere else for me to go.
Yeah.
I want you to consider this before we go on, that
yes,
imagine
sir.
Two trashmen or what refuge management specialists, to be kinder,
yeah,
had like a podcast where they
refuse.
Yeah, where sorry,
he said refuse.
Sorry, refuse.
Yeah.
And they
And they had a podcast.
And they go around and like they're just breaking podcasts. Shit down. Like they pull up to this house and they like they just start talking about like the adult diapers that they know they're going to
be awesome.
Taking on this one, and they talk about this and oh here's like old man so and so's and his fucking dog's gonna come out, and I wish I could put a plate of broken chicken bones and cyanide out here every fucking day. I pick this shit up. And like, you know, like
that would be a great podcast. This might be a future career choice for me. So you know, game development wasn't the dream, but it's you know, and we hear a lot and we see on message boards like, oh, another guy who just sold out and he's going to do this. You know, Luke Smith did this, Brian Intihar did this, and it's not because I don't think. Well, I don't know if it was the case in with them, but with me, it's just this is the obvious place to go. It's not the place that I was dying to go. It's just that if I want to be in a creative field where I get to write and I get to work on, you know. Left brain creative projects, well, this is where I have the connections. This is where I know people. Yeah. If I could go write movies and be in a movie studio, then maybe I'd do that. But this is the one that is available to me. So that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah. You're settling then.
I'm picturing a...
No, I'm not settling. I'm very happy with
our management deciding that we should have no more podcasts with people that work for video game companies because it just seems like we're all being headhunted by people that we meet.
Well, that's another question I got is that I didn't get headhunted. I actually contacted Rod Humble. What was that, Sean?
Nothing.
What did you say? What did you say?
I was talking about how it sucks that you're leaving. I'm serious about that. It we need to address that, right?
Right.
I guess we should address that.
The Brodeo, as we know it, is over with you gone. I mean, let's get tender with you right now, Jeff. You're the greatest boss that I've had. And I'm seriously going to miss working with you. The podcast's been fun, but just on a day-to-day basis, and it sucks ass that you're going. I'm happy for you, though, because I think you're doing the right thing, and I can tell that you're excited, and change is good.
Thanks, man.
But for those of us, we're seriously going to miss you.
I am definitely going to miss being here. I mean, if we're going to just share and care now, you guys have been an awesome group of guys to work with. This podcast has been... the most fun part of working at Ziff Davis, I have to say.
You've just answered a question on our list.
Well, it is true. and you know, and I can say it honestly, especially because we sort of like worked up to this being as fun as it is, right? I mean, we had a lot of growing pains getting to this, and we sort of got pushed into it quite a long while ago. I mean, we've been enjoying it for a while now, but at first it was like, we have to do what? Like, I didn't even know what that word was.
Yeah, it sounded so douchey, a podcast. Yeah. Like, it sounded like, seriously, like the kind of thing that a douche comes up with. And then they set us down, and they press record. And I remember the whole time, I would be like, well, glad someone out there that's not going to want to fucking listen to us has already decided they didn't want to fucking listen to us. Totally like that.
Yeah, I know. I remember, when you asked me to come on, three or four times.
Oh, yeah,
where
you were
I did,
a hater, too.
And I was like, yeah, man. Yeah, just whenever. I'll come on your podcast.
And it's been great to have people like Anthony come along and add to it in their own way, totally expanding the Brodeo universe.
The song and dance, the hat wearing. Put the hat back on.
That was actually before I worked at Ziff, long before when I was working a shitty job at a lab. GFW radio was the one thing I always listened to. And I didn't even have a good PC at the time. And I was one of those people that posted on the boards I don't even play PC games, but I listen to it. And you.
And now he has a job and a PC. And, listen to GFW radio.
And thank
you. You too can be like Anthony Gallegos.
That was something that was cool also to hear PAX. So many people were of that set. I wasn't a PC gamer. I am now. I mean, we heard that so much, but that was when you have someone tell it to your face, it's it made it really shit. Yep. People actually, I mean,
we do get that.
How much better if it could have been we convinced someone to recycle or something worthwhile, you know? But it was still cool that we
could have done GFW Cure AIDS podcast, but instead we did GFW
not necessarily
PC games.
The people I talked to there, but people at PAX though, I would have rather. That they before they became PC gamers, I'd rather they learn to wash their fucking hands after they go to the bathroom. Because the entire time I was there, I swear I saw no one leave that place and stop at that sink. And I know it's nothing but kiosks and hands on and stuff there. And I did get sick when I was at PAX.
So you're saying you were getting stink palmed the whole time?
And it could be Howard Hughes shit, you know, where I'm saying oh, dude, it's because those people didn't wash their hands. But I think it's because those people didn't wash their hands.
Right. Yeah, but you know what? You don't have to leave the building for that because
yeah, we got
I
gotta
say,
right
I am
here.
Not gonna miss the half inch
of urine by the urinals. It's there every day from people fucking missing.
Every day.
Well, it's that.
I don't know how you miss that
it's
bad.
It's that, and sometimes the urinal
you
just miss.
Guys are spraying on the floor.
You know how you miss? You're looking at your motherfucking iPhone while you pee. Yeah. God damn it. If I see another person looking at their iPhone in an inappropriate situation, I'm going to punch somebody.
We need what they have. They started testing in some European country, maybe Germany, but they etch a fly into the urinal.
Right.
And what happens is they test it and they found that there's like almost no more spray over because every guy tries to piss the fly down into the drain.
What about that game? There was a urinal like game that people were selling to bars where you would like drive a car by peeing in like certain directions in the.
Yeah, but that could fail because that's kind of like someone I'm not.
I was trying to make a sharp turn. I'm sorry.
No, but someone who's like insecure.
That's my leg,
like,
asshole.
This is gay. Watch this. And then like they'll just deliberately crash. Like, oh look, I crashed. Like they didn't. You know what I'm saying? Like someone who would just be.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I'm not gonna miss that, but I am gonna miss you guys, and I'm gonna miss the listeners a lot. And again, my inbox is overflowing. I can't possibly answer everybody who wrote me. But I'm really. Truly grateful and honored to get that kind of reception. It kind of blows me away. I blogged about this too. It's a very surreal feeling. I think all of us in this room have felt that at times when you get that kind of mail and you're just doing your job, you know, which is what I've been doing. And so I feel very lucky to get this kind of response on my leaving. And certainly didn't ever expect to be here this long, but I guess after a while you're just sort of. Just sort of are.
Well, I just want to say, as a reader, I think the thing that's going to suck is that for me, I really enjoyed reading the perspective of someone who was older. I'm not a young man myself. I'm married. It was nice to read someone who has a family, who obviously like is good to their family. You got a daughter. She sounds cool, smart, and yet you still play games and you're, you know, a decent guy and you're not like, you know, a total fuckwit or something. I like to. It was nice to read the perspective
well
of someone who of someone who had grown up with games and was still doing it, and it wasn't, you know, going out the window. And,
right.
And I don't think there's much of that around. So
I did sort of like I realized as I hung on longer and longer and the age gap started getting wider, I sort of realized like, oh wow, all of a sudden I have become kind of like what Johnny Wilson was when I started, which was like the older dude who's sort of representing, you know. And that was, you know, that's my lesson to you young men.
you
can
bitter.
Game and have your family.
You never became the one that was like, things used to be so much better and different. I mean, there was never a time.
Right. Well, I honestly don't feel that way. I feel mostly like we're living in the best of times. I mean, I do.
When it comes to gaming.
When it comes to the internet, I mean, it's fucking unbelievable the advantages that people have now for the things they can do.
Here's a question that ties into that from Doomba Servbot. And that basically, what are the major changes in the industry that you experienced over those 17 years in your career?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to outline them all.
Right.
Pick one that you think is significant.
Well, 3D. I'll do it in terms of... everything's in color now. Well, I'd say it's certainly in terms of PC gaming, it's the commercialization of it and the mass popularity of it. I mean, when I started, PC gaming was really just kind of coming out of a much more hobbyist kind of mentality. I mean, and before I started at CGW, it was very much this was the geeky, nerdy hobby that we did as geeks and nerds, and there wasn't even sort of a pretense at that time. That this was going to be something that was going to be embraced by mainstream media. We wouldn't have ever fathomed that there'd be a game like The Sims or World of Warcraft or ever that millions of people were playing. We knew this was like our thing. We're dorks, and we're going to play these gold box RPG games because we're dorks. And so that was kind of our thing. And as it related to our job in the press, what that meant was, you know, we were a sort of a group of hobbyists writing to ourselves. And we only had to please ourselves. And because there was no internet, we were all there were for everybody else too. So we sort of owned that space. That was kind of the amazing thing back then. It's like you really felt like, okay, we're like the magazine of authority on this hobby.
I know
on this
something
hobby.
I won't tell, I won't tell, I won't
Yeah, pretty much.
That was the gaming industry.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, the increasing popularity of PC gaming and gaming in general, which of course is a great thing. We want them to succeed. We want the game companies to succeed. And I think it's what we're seeing to this day, not just in PC gaming, but across the board. I think it's why we're seeing magazines fold, is that the game companies are getting so popular and gaming is getting so popular that they don't need a niche media anymore. They don't need hobbyist pubs because they've got Entertainment Weekly. They don't need a 300,000 circulation magazine because they've got a 5 million circulation magazine. So in some ways, the success of gaming, I feel, is kind of killing the gaming media. I don't mean that in a total gloom and doom way, like it's going to go away anytime in the near future at all. I don't think it is. And I think that there's plenty of things that
the gaming media is making a change.
But then, I mean, that's like a two-part thing, right? I mean, there's the people that have to embrace to both demand and embrace it, you know. And it's like we always say about this, that it's pressuring you. Like, if you can't create your content based on the fact that you were the first to see it and constantly reminding people again and again that you were the first to see it, you have to do something different. But then people have to buy that something different. So it goes back and
forth.
That's right. You'll hear people say, well, we don't want to do it because, well, like, look at Edge. They have so few subscribers. And it's like, really? I mean, if people really did want it, maybe not everyone knows how to get that magazine or things that are like it. But
my advice would be, and we've talked about this amongst ourselves, is that what you want to do then is you want to like drill down and go back to that what it was back then in 1992. You want to just talk to the people who actually want to spend money on a gaming magazine. You don't fuck around. You actually just be serious about it. You know, cinema has Film Comment and other magazines. Doesn't mean that a gaming magazine has to be hardcore serious. But that you just say, okay, we can't compete with Time Magazine when they put Spore on the cover. We can't compete with Entertainment Weekly. But we can talk to the 300,000 dudes who are so nerdy they would spend $7 on a gaming magazine every month. Like, talk to those people. Don't pretend that you're a mainstream magazine. You know, just, like, be hardcore about the hobby, you know, and really go in depth on articles, which is what I thought we were doing at the end of GFW Magazine, which is why I was so frustrated when it got closed. You know, because I felt like our whole strategy was, oh, I'm fucking lecturing. I'm sort of a cranky old man now.
Well, that's why GFW closed, because people didn't want that. But I mean, we don't think that's the case.
Well, I don't think that's the case. Right.
And it wasn't that the magazine was closed down because there weren't enough subscribers. You know,
I mean, look, GFW had a strong subscriber base, and the reasons it closed had much more to do with the state of Ziff Davis's finances than it did with the state of GFW and all that.
Other parties involved too, right? If you're buying ads, right. I mean, you want to be convinced. I mean, you have your own notion. Everyone's got these different ideas, and it's good now and then to see someone. I'm going to name check. I talked to Ryan Jones. You know, he works at PR, does PR for 2K and Take-Two, and he was really honest about saying, just like, yeah, we don't know everything. I mean, even on their side, I mean, they're trying to figure out what do people want? What's the best way to reach people? I mean, how many different types of people are there to reach and stuff like. Mm-hmm.
I definitely think there's a place for the gaming media, and I think that this site, again, is like the one that's onto something really well. I think the guys at Games Videos are amazing in terms of like the one-up show and the kind of content that you're just not going to see elsewhere, because what they're doing is they're creating something that's coming from their own brains. They're not just like shoveling out screenshots or whatever. I think that's what we need. That's what how the gaming press is going to succeed in the long haul.
And the thing that I would love to see, which I mean, I see like cropping up around the Brodeo, which is so impressive to me, is just cultivating like a sense of community and scene.
Yeah.
Like this is like a certain kind of subculture, and like, welcome to the club. And we want to talk about this stuff, and we want to hang out with you guys and like, meet people that are interested in things like this.
And I think that's what I'm sort of getting at. That's what it was like back in the old days of CGW. It felt like, here we're in an extended meeting of a club here. And I think that's when it works best here as well. So.
On that club note, I put up on my Twitter today, someone, do you remember his name? Someone did a painting of Yodel.
Oh, I apologize.
Milking herself.
No way.
Yeah.
Way.
Wow.
Get away.
Fuck you.
That's one of those.
I can't help it.
No, I'm totally the same. Everyone says
it. Definitely is a painting you have to look at like for like 10 seconds before your brain registers what's going on.
I'm getting mad.
And then when it does, you're just like, ah.
You can never unsee it.
Is the milk green?
No, it's white.
It's white.
It says glop, glop.
Nasty. You got any more questions for me?
Yeah, I want to go through these. But also, Robert, I guess I'm getting back to you because you always said that I remind you of Spicoli, and then also Tina started asking you recently, like, if I'm high every single day. I brought that up before, though. So
did you tell her that you are?
That's the only correct response to that. It's like if someone asks
so
if you're gay,
real.
You know, like the only thing is just to like to – you're like not just gay. You're like the gayest person they've ever encountered. So if she thinks I'm high, I'm like fucking ripped out my mind.
You're just like, what? What did you say? Yeah. Toxic.
What are you going to miss, Jeff? What are you going to miss most about being on the press side? And what are you looking forward to most about being on the development side? Oh, okay.
That's
oh, that comes from Complex, the chimney sweep with the heart. Actually, he's not the chimney sweep with the heart of gold. That's our random tag. So it's Complex.
Let's see. I'm going to miss total access to all games. I'll be honest about that. I mean, let's face it, you know. Yeah. We get fucking everything. I've been playing – I actually beat already. I beat Peggle Knights, the sequel to Peggle. It's not out yet. So
when
that's
did
a
you
nice,
get this shit?
Yeah, see? You didn't even know about it.
Is it on
I beat
Steam?
It.
You of all the why didn't you like let us know you had
this? Because it wasn't a transferable code. I tried to share it.
You were just sitting in your office hoarding that?
It's on my blog. I said in between packing I'm playing Peggle Knights. It's not like I was hiding it. Wow. I publicly said I was playing.
I want to play.
Okay, so see, this is an example. But I mean, you know, we were in a very privileged position. I mean, let's face it, if you're a gamer, what better place is there to be than in a place where people are asking you to play their games all day, every day. We had an amazing an amazing job in that way to have all that. And to get that kind of overview, not strictly from the selfish, I get to play this game now, but also just watching everything being made and watching everything develop over time. And actually sometimes even getting to have input on what's happening is such a cool thing. I'm very much going to miss that.
And now you're trading it for the ability to access a coffee machine, which can make 10,000 different kinds of coffee, and like a snack room filled with candies
exactly.
and energy
That's
drinks.
That's a nice, yeah, I mean,
the EA campus is nice. I mean, and to answer that question seriously on the other side, I'm just most looking forward to just
respect.
Being involved. Respect, yeah. I'm looking forward to just actually getting to do something. I'm going to walk in that first day and not have any fucking clue. I won't even know where the bathroom is. Like, how awesome is that for a guy who's been, like, a fucking fixture for almost two decades? Yeah. You know, I'm going to be the new guy, and I have a lot to learn, and that part really excites me.
You're going to have crazy dreams now, though. Like, you're going to go to work the first day, and the whole night you're going to, like, be waking up in the middle of the night dreaming about work and
the
things you're thinking about.
I'm already anticipating somewhere around the second or third day I'm going to have some kind of breakdown, and I'm going to be sitting in my cube or office or whatever, wherever I'm sitting. I don't know what it is. Calling my wife, going, I don't know why I did this. I can't do it. I already know.
You
me
should
and
call
I know
into
happen.
The Brodeo. Hey,
oh,
guys,
I should. A live
can
call.
Can you come
in?
Pick me up?
Yeah. Please let me come back.
Do you happen to have a?
I didn't know how good I had
That's
it here.
That's something a lot of people.
I could get more page views.
What? A lot of people want to know if you're going to be able to do podcasts and stuff now and then.
Well, I think. So, I mean, I want to.
Did
I guess
you talk
I'm,
to your
I'm,
employer?
I'm hesitating because of that, yes.
Then you
I don't
know
if EA is going to let me or not, so we'll have to see. They let Rod Humble.
They got something better for you. I'll say this. Someone I know that works at EA LA, when he drives to work, he brings a bag of his dirty laundry, and when the car lot attendant parks his car,
holy
they
shit.
Take his laundry. When he gets done for the day, he's got a bag of fresh laundry.
Oh, my God.
They bring out and they bring
I don't know if they do that when I'm going. I didn't see anything about laundry service. I know there's a full gym I can join for free.
Wow. And like it seems like a pretty nice place. The people I know that work
sometimes
there,
they have Cokes really in the nice machine as if you got to pay for them.
Oh, there's 25-cent Coke machines at EA. I know that. So that's pretty good.
Your first day, you should just go in with a big like bucket of laundry and just leave it at the receptionist's desk to see what she says.
Or here's my laundry.
My boss's desk.
Yeah. If anybody calls, I'm doing yoga.
Yeah. I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to actually having to work all day, you know, as opposed to just sitting there. Or maybe I could try that strategy at EA, just put my feet up on the desk. Well, this is awesome. Who wants to play Peggle?
That's how you get into management.
Your future boss is probably going to listen to this podcast.
Hey, what the fuck did I do?
Wait, are you going to work for Rod Humble?
Not directly. I don't know if anybody works for him.
Do your new
bosses? I will see him.
Are if you see him, will you ask him if he knows that his name is pseudonymous for small cock?
You mean synonymous?
Dude, that's fucking rude.
What do you say?
No,
Rod. Oh, it's like the guy told you
Rod
his
Humble.
Last name was
Every time I hear that guy's name, the first thing that pops into my mind is small dick. Rod Humble.
That's terrible.
You make
no.
Okay.
I mean, it's like I just.
Right.
I just.
What are we
going
to say to this
podcast?
Man?
Not endorsed by Jeff Green, now member of Sims Team with supervisor Rod Humble. You fucking moron, Robert Ashley. I'm sorry, Rod, Mr. Humble, sir.
I said it jokingly and lovingly. I interviewed that guy once. He was nice.
Do your new bosses know that there have been occasions when you've had to be taped into your office to finish stories?
They don't know about my lack of deadline making, and we won't talk about it here in public.
Oh, okay.
They'll find out soon enough.
You didn't have one of those annoying interviews where they're like, so are you the type of person who turns in your work a day before or the day of your deadline?
No, they were very nice interviews, and they probably should have asked me those kind of questions, but yeah, they'll find out soon enough.
Quick fire questions, Jeff.
Yes,
what's
sir?
Your favorite Velvet Underground album?
Probably Loaded, which I know isn't really the most politically correct answer, but it's mine.
Okay,
or the first one,
album.
Velvet Underground and Nico.
Favorite Bob Dylan album?
I'm going to go with John Wesley Harding.
Wow.
Blonde on Blonde, close second.
Okay,
nice.
And your favorite album by Bruce Springfield?
Springfield?
That's because of an old...
Darkness on Digitam.
That's an inside joke for old-time GFW listeners.
So old, I don't even remember.
I don't know.
You don't remember? I was like, I said it.
Was that somehow... Oh, you mix up...
Yeah.
Dusty Springs.
Or what?
Dusty
what
Springsfield.
Buffalo with Bruce Springsteen? I don't know. Something happened like
that. And it
was
that other guy. Some other guy had a name like that. Well, whatever.
I don't know.
Move on. All right. Well, I'm still getting to some. I'm going based on the ones that you highlighted. I'm assuming those are the ones that you felt comfortable.
They were all good questions.
Someone, you had a couple requests for one last angry rant. Is there anything you can get worked up about all of a sudden?
Oh, God.
Other than...
Don't get me started. Yeah, I need to not burn any bridges here. I'm leaving just fine. I'm leaving just fine.
You don't.
I got out before they threw me out. That was my goal. I beat them.
Yeah.
So there you go.
What is happening?
So ha ha.
Care to define?
No, I don't want to.
Who are?
Let me just say that when you quit a job and the first thing you find out is they are not replacing you, then your suspicions that your position was probably superfluous are probably correct. So I'm thinking I got out just in time.
That job was just made for you.
Well, and to some extent, it probably was, right? I mean, they didn't want to lay us off after the magazine closed, which was very kind of them. Of course, had they laid me off, I would have had some pretty nice severance and some nice long days at the beach, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
They made these positions for us, and I don't know how necessary they all were.
This is a chance to pimp your blog. Someone asked if you'll still post on 1UP, and then they also want to know what are your favorite moments from the Brodeo.
Oh, God. Favorite moments? That one podcast we had a little while ago where we were all in hysterics for forever was
just
an awesome podcast. Was that the Yaddle podcast? That was probably the best
one.
That
was recently. Robert got us with his... A tale from Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Yeah, and my I am going to still blog. I started a new blog. I've already posted twice. I made myself do it right away so that I wouldn't procrastinate on it. So it's up at jeff-greenspeak@blogspot.com. And if that's too hard to remember, on the 1UP blog, I have a link to that. So I am still going to be blogging. I'm not going to be blogging for 1UP because, you know, I don't work for 1UP anymore. I don't have to get them clicks anymore, so there you go.
You could do a Sims developer blog.
I'm done with that. And also, it's just not right. I mean, they'd have to take me out of the editor blog space, and then I go into the general pool. I might as well just
and
start
you,
fresh.
Hey, yeah. You don't have tits, so you won't get clicked down there.
Exactly. Yes.
Can I point out that though, Anthony, the microphone is at eye level, I can indeed hear much crunching.
Yeah, what are you?
Yeah, the sound folks can all hear.
You
that.
Had lunch, too, unlike Robert, man.
Yeah.
Ryan, what were you going to ask me?
I'm telling you, there's something strangely addictive about this.
I believe you.
So the URL you just mentioned, like, does somebody else already have Greenspeak?
Yeah, some freaking dillweeds with some, I don't know. It's either like an Alan Greenspan thing, because that's like a word used for him, is Greenspeak. That's how he talks.
It's got to be like an environmental thing.
Then there's another, yeah, there is one that's environmental. So, yeah.
Bunch of jerks.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Way to save the earth, assholes.
Let's throw some games coming in. If you want to, like, keep going through those, and if any other stuff comes up, like, we can go back and forth.
That's cool. Yeah, let's move on, because we do have other games.
Anthony recently wrote a preview for Demigod. We both saw it here. I saw it again at PAX. And I'm upset because I think that the beta's now out, and we didn't get invites, even though Taylor himself promised he would hook me up with it.
Maybe he's heard our Space Siege rant.
Maybe. No, he seemed pretty cool. I definitely talked to him after that, and he seemed like he didn't.
Yeah,
I don't think he was concerned about the rant or the reviews or. So Demigod, break it down. It's another one of those games where, like, they're looking for something to call it. I think Chris Taylor's been calling it what's he saying? An action. It's more. What is he saying?
I forgot. He was like
an action strategy game, I think, is what he described it as. And I looked at it more as like. I mean, it's closer to real-time tactics. I mean, ultimately, the name is not going to matter insofar as you look at it. It's like, if you're used to playing RTS games, you'll see it, and it'll seem familiar. Except the difference here is that rather than controlling the entire army and building up the units and stuff, you're control of a single unit, a single heroic unit. And there's an exception to that we'll get to. But so these are the demigods from the title. There are eight of them, and they're divided along two camps. There are some that are called assassins and others that are called generals. And the assassins that they've been showing so far, the big rook character that they've showed over and over again, looks kind of like a giant. It looks kind of like, you know, the character's Muscle Man. I know there's like some Japanese name for it that people prefer to call it, but fuck them. It's Muscle Man.
Yeah.
And there's like a guy made of bricks, you know, he's like a giant tower man. It kind of reminds me of that. It's like a Tower of Babel with legs.
It kind
of
looks like the last boss in Shadow of the Colossus.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So, like, in this case, what happens is you have this board. You can have up. We've every time we've seen it, it's been 3v3.
Yeah.
So, you're basically just trying to work your way across this map, and there are different lines of battle and lanes that you can go through. And you have these what they call creeps, and they're just like automatically they're spawned by some, you know, procedural thing that, or some rule set rather, that just says these are gonna come out at this rate, and they help you. You don't direct them or command them or anything, and they just go out and help you. And you've got control over certain powers. You know, you can stomp things. The rook can uproot these towers that sort of channel energy across the map and then relocate them and get certain abilities doing that. Gets upgrades so that there's, like, archers that appear in his shoulders and are, you know, raining arrows down on the enemies. And catapults or trebuchets and stuff appear on some of the other, you know, towers that he's got on his body. And for me so far, the problem is that, I mean, I think the draw would be that if you're intimidated by the seeming complexity of an RTS, like, here you go. One unit, you could do that. Anyone can do that. Mm-hmm. But then the loss is that, for me so far, it doesn't seem like it's going to be all that fun to just take that one unit and order it to beat on people or wait for its superpowers to recharge and do those. Because that starts to sound a lot like a lot of MMOs, you know. But instead of, imagine an MMO world, you're just trying to work across the side of a map and take over their base, break down their towers and stuff. And so, like, let's stop there and get your take on that, Anthony. I know you seem to like that aspect of it more.
Yeah, I thought it played in a lot of ways kind of like it was more akin to like a Diablo game, like a point-and-click action, except that instead of just fighting, like, mobs on one side like in Diablo, it was like you're running around with an army of your own mobs. And since you couldn't command them, you had to pay attention to the way they moved. Because if they were all moving in on a tower, they can't do it on their own, so they need you to go in there and help support them. Or if the enemy god comes, it's obvious that you have to, like, go there. And if you were playing with, like, other players, since there's usually, like, on the 3v3 we saw, there was three lanes of travel, you could, like, coordinate. So two of you move up one channel, you know, and like, then they would have to coordinate, obviously, on their side as well. So I think the demigods have a potential to have a lot of influence in the battle. But like you, I was disappointed with the assassin demigods in the sense that, like, for me, coming from playing so many, like, strategy games and stuff, I really, like, wanted to play more of the general demigods that get to control armies. I mean, supposedly, I haven't seen them at all.
I found out about the current state of that, too, and that had me. So the bright side is, I think the game looks fantastic. I like the art direction. The maps are super interesting. And when you zoom out of these battlefields, there's usually some sort of motif to it or something. Like there's the one they call it Snake in Space, and it's basically just like this statue floating in the vacuum of space. And it's a guy holding like a serpent, and the serpent is what you actually fight on. It's like flat on top. But when you zoom out, it's only then that you see the context of where you're having this battle on. But then, like you're saying, the promise was that maybe when you play the general side, things become more interesting. And this way you satisfy both types of players, those that aren't intimidated by the complexity or even the people who start simple and then want to graduate to the complexity. But actually the way that the generals are set now, the only difference is that the creeps will attack with you. You're not deciding which ones are spawned, and you can't tell them split over here and here, do a pincer movement or whatever. You know, they just, if you go to attack somewhere, they come with you and assist you. And I mean, I told Chris that Chris isn't the designer of the game. I mean, he's part of what's the situation on this, Jeff?
Well, it was being developed out of house, and I'm just blanking on the name of the company, and I apologize for that.
It's just like he brought him into Gas Powered Games.
That's right. He brought this team in to do it,
and then it's now, you know, they have a deal with Stardock, and so
right,
it's gonna
publishing deal with those guys.
Stuff.
Also, but, I mean, wasn't they emphasizing sort of the fighting game aspect of it anyway? I mean, they're sort of
de-emphasizing that. It seems that that's the game they want to make. Mm-hmm. I did get some sense from Chris that there's conflict in the studio, normal kind. I mean,
sure,
nothing to be alarmed over or anything that indicates anything that's not normal is happening, but there's just a normal disagreement of people that think, like Anthony and I are saying, that yeah, there mm-hmm. probably should be something there. And I know Chris is concerned about, well, if it seems too complicated, what do you do with the message? And what I just tried to explain is that, like take a game like Left 4 Dead, for example, where it's being shown over and over again in the most, you know, simplistic and accessible terms. You're a human, zombies run at you, you fucking blow them up and you get scared, or like mm-hmm. you pump your fist when you blow a bunch up. At the same time, the game, of course, we know offers the ability to play on the zombie side. It's going to be more complicated. It's going to be difficult. It's going to require total coordination if you hope to succeed, or, you know, because otherwise you just run out and you get shot once and you die, you blow up or something. You want to act in concert. But that's the part that they're sort of leaving there. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, likewise with the fighting, it reminds me of a fighting game where you get Soul Calibur and there's characters like Mitsurugi there, and you can pick that up and play it. And then as you keep playing, or if you're the person who thinks that that's maybe like doesn't offer you enough range, then you have like Voldo characters and Ivy characters with stance shifts and, you know, all these other things. And that's also what adds to the ultimate playability, is that you just keep going at it, you know.
Right.
You can pick some things up. So I was definitely thinking if they can work something out where the generals are closer to, you know, an RTT or something, and then you have mm-hmm. like the Diablo style for the others, that might be pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I'm not writing it off or anything. I think that's my concern right now, is that maybe that's just not engaging enough. So we're going to take another break now.
Right. And then we're coming back very briefly, because I think we're almost out of time here.
Really?
I was told, yes.
Okay, so Far Cry 2.
Or we might have to say goodbye to Jeff.
That's appropriate for the last GFW. Every time there's like the big game.
Jeff is moving far away, and we're going
to
cry.
To talk about in
Far
Cry. 2 days at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll be back with Far Cry and some final thoughts.
Can you help an old man? I used to work in this building, the computer gaming world. Then they shut that down. Then Microsoft bought it, and they had a magazine. Then they shut that down. Then I worked on this website, and I didn't do a good job, so I had to leave. Then I went to EA, and I didn't do a good job there. And now I can't afford to feed my family. Can you spare a quarter?
Wow.
Well, you weren't even taping, were we?
Can you spare some Peggle review code?
Oh, we were? Good. Okay.
I hear Peggle 3's out, and I haven't been able to play it yet. You just give me $1 so I can download Peggle 3, sir, and make my day.
You got to be specific. Like, Peggle is like $5, and you've got $3.62.
I'm going to get another $1.30, sir.
Yeah. We're laughing now.
We'll be crying in 5 years. What is
it? All right. So what else? What are we doing here?
That.
That's what we're doing. Are we going to talk about Far Cry 2? Do we have time? Or are you guys going to do that next week? Because there is, in fact, going to be next week.
There's
right?
One more.
One at least
more
one
GFW
more.
Radio.
My sincere wish for you group of young fellows is that you continue to podcast in some form. Because you're a very funny group of guys, and I don't think you need me to have a successful podcast. I fully believe you can do it. You have done it in the weeks I've been gone, so I hope on behalf of the fans
complain, then.
That you continue. Well, some will, but, you know, change is inevitable, you know?
The
Colonel Blake had to leave MASH, and they went on. They got Colonel Potter.
Some people never like Colonel Potter. Other people love Colonel Potter.
You should just do the Bewitched thing and get a new Darren.
And get a new Darren.
Like, yeah. Hey, it's Jeff Green.
Or bring back Darren.
At lunch, Darren, you were bitching about the fact that Barney Rubble had a different voice actor.
Oh, shit, you're right. Now I'm being a hypocrite. That's right. I don't know if you guys, because I was actually alive during the switch. So this wasn't on reruns. I remember when they switched Barney Rubble's voice. Because he used to sort of have this voice. Hey, Fred. And then something happened to that guy. He got fired or he quit or whatever. And then the next Barney was kind of like this. And I remember as a little kid, I was like, what the fuck?
Did people on the message boards go crazy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Holy back shit, I can't even imagine. That must have been such a flame war.
Yeah. We did that with Donatello on Ninja Turtles.
Did you talk about it in the playground at least?
Oh, hell yeah, we did. Yeah.
Was there any anger? Was there
Oh,
any,
no,
like,
it'd be like, I like the new Barney better. It'd be like, you know, that'd be that.
But there wasn't, stuff. You weren't like, we're going to go fucking one star this on Amazon type shit.
See, that's what I'm saying. Everything's better now. Everybody can do shit like that. We had no voice. We were powerless against the man.
But those same people can bitch about the fact that you're not on GFW and that it's not the same for years and years, much as they do for Luke and 1UP.
They do, but
and
let
I don't
me
think
say...
any of us are interested in that.
But let me say to those fans that after I leave, if there is still a podcast and these boys are involved here, you should listen.
Wait,
I'm
are
saying
we,
that
are
right
we,
now.
Are we, like, recording?
Yeah, I think we're recording.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, we're recording. I would sincerely hope they
I didn't
would,
know we got the sign.
I would sincerely hope they would keep listening to you guys talk. I know I will.
That sounds about like Hillary Clinton.
Really? Was that just a Hillary speech?
You're like, you guys should definitely tune in to the GFW
Radio podcast.
Yeah, and
since they want Jeff, they're going to vote for EA now. They're going to listen to EA. They're not going to listen to our podcast.
I'm not doing anything. I don't have a podcast at EA, so listen to Brodeo 2 or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
And if you are podcasting still, and then I can come back.
Okay, and so. you're appearing on Gamers with Jobs podcast this week, right?
Oh, that's true. Barring any difficulty or conflict with my family, Gamers with Jobs, who I've been a guest on a few times, and we have Julian Murdoch on our podcast here, so we're all good friends. I've been invited to appear on their Sunday podcast where I will probably yammer about some of the same shit. So
that's good. This sounds fun.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun times.
Yeah.
Those are good guys. Good podcast.
Maybe you guys find up making that Garbage Man. When you're out here begging for Peggle code, I'll invite you to do my Garbage Man podcast.
You mean the one where I deliver garbage?
You just ride
with
the
Rod Humble.
You talk shit on the people's trash that on people whose trash we're picking
I
up.
I think you're really onto something. You know, there was a guy who made his whole career out
There's
of picking through Bob Dylan's garbage.
Like in New Jersey or someplace that they got to have it. You know, it's like just undiscovered, brilliant material. Just
I'm
press
sure.
record. Basically put a recorder in the cabin of the vehicle and then, or actually mic them up because when they're like hanging off the back and I'm sure you get some of the best grumbling when they're actually trying to lift and someone put like 50 pounds of cinder blocks and like in the trash.
Oh my God, it's full of diapers.
Yeah. Are we done?
No.
Oh, we're not done.
Well, this is how like, well, I guess we're, if you want to be done, we're done.
No, we have to be done.
I've been looking forward to talking about Far Cry.
I know,
it's one of those
I know you want
where
to.
No one else has played it yet, so we've seen some of it.
But
do you like it?
Look
Are you happy?
I've been playing a lot of it because I have the thing at my house. I've been able to basically have unlimited access to an unfinal copy, you know, so subject to change, as we should say. And definitely liking it so far. I mean, I'm to the point where I'm convinced it's a good game, and the issue is whether or not it'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the most noticeable thing is just the fact that they've taken. I mean, you remember how much I liked Crysis when it came out?
Yep.
And I was so appreciative of their approach to level design, in that it ultimately was on rails in some respect, but I mean, you could move sideways and backwards, so to speak. It wasn't just constantly and relentlessly moving you forward. And it gave you a lot of, you know, because of that, it gave you a lot of tactical freedom, and you felt, you know, that you were someplace. And this takes it a step further and basically says, let's arrange the world as though it were Just Cause or Grand Theft Auto or something, and it's still going to be a first-person shooter, though. And it's still going to remind... It's still going to have a lot in common with first-person shooters, and it's basically not just going to be Just Cause with the first-person camera. There's a lot that you can get from there. I mean, the immediate benefits are that, you know, when you're in this world, you instead of going from level to level, you really develop a sense of continuity and familiarity with the place. You develop, like, you know, a mental map of it, after a while, you start to recognize, okay, there's going to be a bend in the road up here. I know this, and there's probably a patrol here at this time of night. Maybe I want to, like, get out of the vehicle, turn out the lights, and go around the bushes or something. And just the quality of the environment and the presentation really contributes to that. I mean, because it looks so phenomenal. I mean, the sun setting and moving through accelerated cycles, kind of like mm-hmm. GTA, but instead of whatever the speed there is, like a half hour is a whole day cycle here. It's about 4 hours per 24 hours. Changes in weather, a storm will come through, and then it's not just that the sky darkens and that it rains, but the wind actually registers in the world with a certain direction. And that could have a bearing on the flammability of that world. So, I mean, you know, you throw something, you could shoot, say you're having a gunfight and you end up shooting a box of ammo. Then the rounds start cooking off and doing their fireworks show, and that could set a fire to some tall grass that was beside the box. The wind's blowing your way and it's blowing strong. The conflagration is going to, you know, envelop you really quickly. You could have times when there's not. And I mean, the flammability is a big part of it. You can have just like, you're fighting people and you want to keep distance between you and them. Maybe they got shotguns or something and you could put down a firewall and they're obviously not going to come across it. I mean, then suddenly you've got the advantage because you can shoot your rifle through it and throw grenades over it. And all that seems cool. And it's also neat to just be able to have that kind of like, you know, I'm going to go here and I'm going to take this mission, or I'm just going to go explore and see what's up. I'm going to just try to climb this mountain and hang glide off of it and try to land on a church or something. Again, very Grand Theft Auto like things when what people have celebrated for the longest time. The drawbacks, though, that I've only played it for about 4 hours, so I can't, you know, conclusively say that any of this stuff is like a definite danger, and that there are going to be issues when the game ships out and people play through it in its entirety. But in a game like a Half-Life or something, you always have this objective. I mean, in Half-Life 2, it's a citadel. It's omnipresent. You see it. You're always aware that you have a destination and you're heading toward it. Maybe to some extent in Halo, you know, you're going to end up on the titular Halo space station and probably blow it up if it's anything like the Death Star or something. But they have like this, I mean, you do have this sense of forward movement and drive. And what this game kind of game, because it doesn't have it, it's more, I mean, it's got an objective. But since you're just crisscrossing the same world and you might not necessarily feel that you are building towards something, you know, I mean, even though you got the continuity, if you go from savanna to jungle, I mean, you've driven from one ecosystem to another and you've experienced that. It's not like, huh, where am I going to be at in the next level? I'm going to be underground in the antlion caves, or am I going to be in Russia, you know, Call of Duty's case, and then I'm going to be back here, the nuke going to go off. So, you know, that can be an issue. And then the other thing is that in this kind of game, what happens then is, since you don't have these scripted set pieces where you're, you know, I mean, you can just like really carefully tweak the intensity throughout for the entire play experience. You say, yeah, let's put in a couple big heavy grunts here. I'm trying to draw examples from a bunch of different games, so it's not just Half-Life over and over again. I talk about that one because I played it so much. And, you know, we're going to have a tank come out here or something. And in this game, it's not so carefully orchestrated, and players might decide, I'm not going to have a fight for another hour. I'm just going to go on the outback and drive around or something, and then there's going to be a random encounter. What that then means is that the quality of those random encounters have to carry the game to an extent, because, I mean, if your missions consist of a series of, like, raiding base camps, you know, being, you have to go assassinate someone here, or you have to steal something here, acquire this from this base, and it's just going from one place to another and having these fights, those fights better be pretty fucking good. And right now, they are, insofar as, you know, dealing with the flames, you know, goes and everything else, but the AI pretty much stinks. They could fix that, you know, but right now it stinks. And
this is a beta you're looking at? Or
it's not a beta. It's just a preview code.
Okay.
So again, like, you know, totally subject to change, but I mean, that's going to be something to watch for. You're going to need not confused and wooden enemy behavior, but you're going to need interesting stuff where sometimes they'll do it. Like, I mean, I had a circumstance where I was... Let me get a drink here.
That's not a drink. That's Red Bull.
So I had a... Like, the other thing that's cool about the game is, instead of constantly moving forward and fighting, you have the ability to retreat. And so you have escape phases as well. So if you go to some camp and you strip the hornet's nest, kill one guy, and you decide, I'm getting in the Jeep and getting out of here, you have people chasing you, which is something that you don't always get in, you know, in a Call of Duty or something. And that can be cool. I had a part where they shot my truck up at... I thought it was going to overheat to the point that I was like, all right, I'm just going to get out. But apparently it wasn't done, because I got out and started running, and people chasing me got in it and used it to run me down.
It cheated.
And that was totally cool. I mean, and there was another time where people were chasing me, And the first time I was like, dude, are these people chasing me? Like, what idiots? Because I had RPGs on me. I had a ton of them. So I just get out of my car and, like, shoot them with RPGs. And it's just big, dramatic, incredible explosions as they go flying through, like, the African night and set a fire out into the weeds on the side of the road.
I could see it totally working without halfway decent AI just because of the whole Grand Theft Auto idea, which Grand Theft Auto, even 4, you know, has never had enemies that didn't come across to me like the guys who, you know, pop out of boxes and digitized shooters that you'd play at Putt-Putt.
Yeah. But there's, I would argue from what I played, there's like a great deal more variety in Grand Theft Auto.
Really?
And in the types of the missions and just the whole thing. I mean, the whole, you know, running over random people and, I mean, all those different things that go in. Sometimes you have like an RC mission or the missions to like race your car or something. And here, I can't say because I haven't experienced the game in its entirety, so I don't know what the true range of mission objectives are, but all the missions I've done so far have more or less been about going to a place, having a firefight, and getting out and going back.
It sounds kind of like more in the vein of Crackdown. Like, you go, you're like, scale, you know, you're making then, your way to some central point that you got to, like, fight all the enemies at.
Right.
And even
in Crackdown, though, it's kind of like, well, co-op is really important in that circumstance.
Yeah, sure.
This would have been a fantastic game for co-op. Oh, my God, I would have loved it. But it's still like, then Crackdown, you're like, yeah, we're going to jump to the top of this building and play like we're Spider-Man or the Hulk jumping through the city or something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong, but that could be the case, right? Maybe flying hang gliders is that much fun. Maybe there's like helicopters we don't know about in the game. So far, it's just boats and trucks, you know?
Yeah.
And that might totally be the case. What else? There's a few other concerns I have about the game. And because it is drawing from GTA, it's like it also risks inheriting some of like sort of like the defects that are unique to that kind of game. Mm-hmm. And that would be, say, your mission is to go and assassinate someone, and then terms for the completion of the mission are to actually return to the person who gave you it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the PC version, you can save anywhere, so it's not a problem. But say in the console, you have to be at a safe house to save. Well, what happens when you go do the mission, you're successful, involves a 15-mile drive there, and on the way back, you run into a random patrol, and then you die. Then you're presented with a situation where you're going to do it again, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so those are little things that could happen. At first, I was worried about this one thing where you're going, it's like a problem with MMOs. In MMOs, if you don't have a quest, you can still go to quest places.
Mm-hmm.
But and you can still do the same exact thing, sometimes even with other people. But the game doesn't acknowledge that you've done anything because you're not officially on the quest line.
Right.
And here, I go out to this giant fort, and it's full of people, and it's clearly designed. I mean, they clearly took time to create this fort because it's going to be a mission at some point. It wasn't a mission I was on at the time. So I went, cleared it out, blew everyone up, rooted through it, tried to find every single thing I could, make sure there was, like, not some, you know, hidden diamonds or something in there. Nothing. And it was like, I just know that at some point in the game, that's going to be a mission, and I'm going to go right back.
You got to go
like,
do
hey,
it again.
Hey, remember you guys. You know.
Will they still be dead?
Oh, certainly not. I'm sure they'll be
back.
That would
be really funny, though.
They would be cool if they were. If you go back and they're dead.
Like,
and
we need you to clear out the fort. Way to go on clearing out the fort.
So what I was thinking would work in that would be like, I mean, because the game's fiction already assumes that someone has GPS tracking on you.
Yeah.
Because you get these cell phone calls now and then. Oh, no, because when you die, is an interesting part of the game is that you don't really die the first time, but you have these allies, and they come in. It's like they just come in out of nowhere, you know, and then they pick you up, and you weren't really dead. It's like maybe you have a broken hand, and you like it just automatically shows you like setting your fingers in first person, or pulling out like a nail from between your fingers, or yanking a bullet out of your leg with a pair of pliers as they're fighting.
Yeah.
And then you fight with them for like 5 minutes, but their ability to arrive anytime you're in danger implies that they know where you're at. So those same people could say, hey, you're by this fort. There's a motherfucker that needs dying there. Why don't you go do this right now? Well, that's the kind of world it is. It's like harsh. I mean, it's just like savage people, you know.
Sounds good.
It's a world in which motherfuckers need dying.
Yeah, I mean, it's like people
be a good
all
tagline.
Around the world.
That'd be great for the box.
There's this war between two factions going on, and people from all mercenaries and hired guns from all around the world and with different interests and opportunities there to make a buck off it, you know, off something or another, off selling weapons or diamonds are there. And those are the people that are, you know.
I definitely think if that was on the box, more people would buy it than anything. Because motherfuckers need dying. Far Cry 2. Coming December 2008.
Oh, I think that sounds like a good commercial, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you should work on that somehow and work that into a Sims ad.
Sims 3, because motherfuckers need dying. Removing the staircase from the pool, you know, locking people in their rooms.
You're the only one here that knows about the new Sims expansion pack, which is Sims Automatic Weapons.
Yeah, that's going to be my goal.
Because motherfuckers need
dying. Yeah. Mr. Humble, I have a great idea.
I like
this. Teenage girls will love this.
Yeah, we sell this to teenage girls. We need to start selling it to like the key male demographic.
Like, I
you
love
can
the
go
Sims,
and you pitch it like you know your you know
people.
Your sister's Sims world that she spends so much time in, and then it's just like boom boom. They like the trailer starts. It's like, boom.
Yeah,
shit. People bodies flying. Uh-huh.
It's like the little
boy running through like murdering his whole family.
Yeah. The little brother who used to like torture the Barbie doll can now come and like destroy his sister. Sims family,
and they could sell that.
I think
and make
we're on
it happy.
To something
yeah,
here.
Then they could make uh-huh. them happy because you're basically it clones a copy of their world. It's not like the sole existing one. So that way he can do it and feel like that without making you know Susie cry because her world's been destroyed.
Right,
and then they can have a version for her. Then like she can go in and like do whatever you know, make all of like his like super protagonists
put
and like, gay relationships
him.
And stuff.
No, fuck that.
Just to mess with him.
I think it should be on a USB stick, and little brother can just go into the computer. Just plug it in, start killing. Permanently.
Sold strictly in USB.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's just like you're coming in, you hack into a game. I don't know if there's any, like, basis for that in reality. I saw it on TV, but I think we can make it happen. USB, pop.
There's a lot you
automatic
see on
TV, weapons.
Like the classic one, like, we need more RAM, we need more RAM. And then you hear, like, did it put someone
we've
like,
got it.
Yeah, someone puts a couple keystrokes in on the computer.
Yeah.
He's like, there you go.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. So, the game's also got this, like, really elaborate world editor that for multiplayer that seems pretty cool to use. I mean, people really like Forge for Halo 3 that allowed you to basically place mm-hmm. weapons and bounce pads and change items, vehicle spawns and such. And then here's a true proper world editor. But the difference is that, I mean, importantly, it seems really easy to use and to use in a way where the results are good. So like if you want to be the sort who specifically plants every tree and every bush and every rock and you go through with a texturing tool and you texture this amount, you want to transition, say you put a creek bed in, you're like, these kind of plants are on like the sides. I don't want any.
So
repetition.
Basically if you're a professional landscaper.
Right. If you're a professional landscaper or like someone who you want to, maybe you're thinking about making levels at some point, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a really accessible way to try. Or you could just take, you know, this procedural tool and put in, say, like, hey, I want this, and you change the size of the brush. It could just be enormous. I'm just going to coat all this landscape in it. But then you're like, hey, that might look too shitty, so you just change a few other variables, and it will be like, only apply this to slopes that are like this grade or something, because then that way you don't have hills that look that have like trees growing off, and it's just like entirely.
Oh, so you're saying like you've got like the tree brush and you paint across the countryside, and you can define some rules like, yeah, but don't put them on rocks.
Yeah,
put
exactly.
Them on,
don't put them on slopes, yeah. And it will already do a nice job of randomizing it and stuff. And then based on the type of jungle or whatever, like it'll put the audio in, so like the appropriate types of like bird sounds and stuff like that.
Because these guys are making the game are like obsessed with all this procedural simulation stuff, right? I mean, I looked at Far Cry like a year ago or a half a year ago, and everything that they were wanting to tell me about was like all the crazier procedural like simulation stuff they had going for like how the world knows where to grow grass and trees because you can chop it all down. Mm-hmm. And
right.
You can,
exactly. Yeah. And those are the same sorts of things. Like a riverbed. Say you put in a riverbed. Very easy. You just take the tool, draw a line right through. Same thing as a road or something. Throw another pass over it with the texturing tool, and it just kind of like randomizes it so it's not this uniformly mm-hmm. deep creek bed. And then you go on yet another tool. All this takes like just a couple of minutes, and say, put this texture and these sorts of assets on any part of the map that's like 5 feet below the equivalent of sea level in there. Then boom, the creek bed's got its stuff, and you don't have to worry about it appearing somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that seems fun. And what I think people are going to do is, I mean, they'll do some interesting things. And at first, I just imagine like just shitty, unbalanced maps will proliferate. This is the norm. Anytime a map editor, even professional ones like Source when it came out, you know, and gimmick games, but those can be fun too. So like, say you just make this giant flammable world or whatever with key areas and you throw everyone in it, and so you put high winds and it's randomized, so the next thing is like basically running through just this giant burning field of tall like elephant grass but still trying to fight each other or something. Maybe that, yeah. I mean, that's a shitty example, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, but someone could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, I was kind of speculating, people are probably going to say, I mean, there's only certain kind of games you could imitate, and in this case, you probably could make a lot of, you could do Far Cry 2 versions of COD, popular COD maps.
Mm-hmm.
The games are, like, similar enough, you know, it's not like Halo or something where they're, like, really different and they're inside, and because you're using the buildings and stuff, and then after that, people could probably have fun just, like, figuring out cool ways to set things up, you know.
Can
like,
you bring in stuff that just doesn't fit with the world at all? Like, can you build a McDonald's in Africa?
No. All the assets are basically ones that they're taking from the game. So there's, like, a range of stuff in there. I mean, there could be industrial works and, like, you know, colonial churches and, you know, all this kind of stuff like that, and down to just, like, really seedy shacks and stuff, and then just open environment. And I hope you could put the animals in multiplayer. That will be pretty cool because there are scenarios, you know, like Clint Hawking was telling me, he's a creative director for the game, that, you know, he's had, you know, the best case scenarios when you have anecdotes when you play these games. It's like, this, I did this and this happened, kind of like, you know, the one I gave about being chased. And in his case, it's like he alerts these guards and they start summoning all this help and the Jeeps are coming in. And right when they come in, like, one of them, like this buffalo or wildebeest just jumped out in front of one of them. And so it hit that and boom, sent the truck flying, killed the animal. Or another time where, like, you know, you're trying to sneak up somewhere and gazelles see you. And they run, and then that ends up alerting the AI, so then they go out into a search to see what the hell caused that. So, I mean, that would be pretty interesting if you can put those, if you can put the animals in multiplayer games, too. Of course, everyone's just going to, like, then make the map where it's, like, nothing but 50 buffaloes in the middle of, like, a pen, and then everyone's got missile launchers, you know.
Like, that sounds great, though.
Yeah, that does sound good.
Yeah.
True.
Oh.
True.
It's getting sad.
So yeah,
if we just keep talking, it can't end.
Our time is coming.
If we keep talking, Jeff can't leave.
Dude, you guys know
we'll
that
do a filibuster.
These make like good shakers. Okay, not really.
You want to eat some more toxic waste, Jeff?
No, I really don't want to eat more toxic. I don't want to go out by vomiting on.
Well, what's your final message before you start whoring yourself out to 50 other podcasts the rest of the week?
No, I'm only on one more. Those gamers are jobs.
Let's let everyone know. Hey, dude, where you're at Joystick, wherever you're at, you want Jeff on? I'm his agent now. I can hook you up.
I know his Skype ID.
No, I'm going to quickly run out of things to say. So, and I'm going to have to move on to my actual job, as it were. So I start in 2 weeks. So,
what are you doing until then?
Fucking around.
Yeah, are you going to just – do you have, like, a book you want to read or – or something you want to do? You just gonna like lay around in your bathroom?
I saw it on his desk. He's already reading it. It's another one of those like, when the blood and bodies were up to my waist as I waded through the slain something corked corn people.
Well, it's not quite that good. No, I'm reading Steve Erickson's Malazan series. If you're a fantasy,
based
reader.
In part on his D&D campaign.
Okay, yes, it did start as a D&D campaign, but in his defense, he did.
Did it? This is on the back, based on a real D&D campaign.
God no, it doesn't say that. But if you Wikipedia it, you'll find out. But you know, he did go to Iowa Writers Workshop. He does know his shit as a writer. It's a 10-volume series, and each volume is like fatter than the last.
I bet people loved workshopping his stuff there.
Yeah, I honestly.
So what? Is this guy a barbarian or is he a barbarian?
I'm just not finding these.
I'm
elves
not sure. I know how I feel about what you're doing. With
I'm
the
sure
barbarian.
I'm sure he befuddled the workshop group, but you know, it was based on a D&D campaign, and there are times when I'm reading it and I am laughing to myself because it's like clearly, you know, like this is the scene where the healer rolls up, you know, whatever. I mean, you could kind of feel those moments. But
did that add to the excitement for you?
Oh, totally.
Like someone told me
that happened in my campaign.
Someone told me
I could have written this.
Did a die roll on that?
Yeah. So, but he's a really good writer, and he's created this pretty amazing world. I mean, among fantasy fans, this is a pretty highly regarded series. If you're not a fantasy fan, this is probably not going to change your mind. And certainly over the past few weeks, as I've read the first book, I've thought, I could just bring this down into random readings, and I knew Sean would just laugh.
I'm not laughing. Ryan's looking at me the whole time.
I'm laughing because Ryan's basically like laughing like, what a fucking dork.
It was all... No,
what,
Ryan,
me?
You said... You said it's pretty highly acknowledged among fantasy fans, and Ryan immediately looked at me like, what if I said Booster Gold fans love this Booster Gold book?
There will be people who will respond on message boards, so telling you how good a writer this Erickson is.
Of course
so.
They will. They'll send me
he's
PMs.
He's quite a good writer.
Too.
He's a very much a cut above
they
most
sent me
of your
PMs about how I should vote for
writers.
Ron Paul, too. And well, why.
Is he better than the Dragonlance writers?
Well, I actually think so, yeah. So
you read Dragonlance?
I read the first one, so.
Wow. I read like the first 10.
Yeah, we'll see. You got nothing on me then.
You could be reading about the size of testes of males and
yeah.
mammals. And
I am planning on a week of nothing but stuff like that. So going to catch up on season one of Mad Men on DVD. Fine series. Excellent. Outstanding if you haven't seen it yet. I'm almost about halfway through that season. So
Netflix doesn't want to send me that.
Why not?
I don't know. I keep getting the movie behind it.
That's because I'm hoarding them.
I guess
it likes me better.
What do you mean? On your queue. The next one in your... Huh.
Yeah. I don't have any real final words. Go out and be happy.
Put the sombrero on as you give us your final... Put the sombrero on.
Put the sombrero. Well, yeah, is this the honorary you're out of here sombrero?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a ritual here.
I guess it is.
I'm now... It doesn't fit because of the headphones.
Hola.
Don't say nothing racist with that on your head. No.
Hola.
Don't do hola. I am the Frito Bandito.
No, you were the one who actually speculated that you defended Homie Rollers and said that, like, yeah, like, the whole... Remember the whole shit about
sure.
a chili pepper riding a burrito was just like at home.
So I did. That? I am a man of the people. I don't have to. Let's sign off here, Ryan. I'm ceremoniously handing the sombrero to you as we sign off here on this very very bittersweet occasion. I hope to see you all again sometime.
You can't go. This is like the end of a first date when you're in high school. Like, we got to keep coming up with the pretext to hang out for like 5 more minutes until we all make out. So,
dude,
that's going to be you eating a mouthful of you. You could do it, Jeff. Come on. Like, I'll open
it's
them for
the
you.
It's the only way to go out.
You eat, yeah, for your final,
moment.
Non-words, but for your final yeah. utterances on the GFW radio.
Yeah.
Three of them at once.
Three at once. Yeah. Three toxic
ways
at once.
Do it.
No.
This like, isn't yeah. the end of my podcast. This is like frat initiation.
Ryan, you guys are familiar.
Can't I go out with class?
You guys are familiar with the story
like
of how.
Like a Johnny Carson golf swing or something like that? You know?
No.
What's that?
You're familiar with the story that Ryan Scott once
What's
tried
that?
Taco,
fucking kids.
Taco Bell mild sauce, and it yep. so burned his mouth he had to go into intensive care. So here we go. Jeff,
yeah.
I don't want to.
All right.
Don't touch the lid. Yeah. No,
on
Jeff,
the lid.
You can.
Okay.
And then what are we going to do? It's going to fade out with me screaming?
It's going to fade out with you. We will all observe a moment of awkward silence.
All right.
No.
I dropped
it's
one.
Good.
It's still good. It's still good.
More flavor.
3-second rule.
Okay.
Stare into the camera as
this,
you
this
put them all,
right
all at once. All
right. We got a red one. Another red one. Do they have different flavors?
Yeah, they're
I don't think
different.
You're going to taste
one.
You're not going to taste
the flavor is pucker.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love you all. I will miss you. I hope to see you again. Thank you for all your support over the years. It's been a pleasure. Going to miss the podcast and all the fans. And on behalf of Toxic Waste, brought to you by the government of Pakistan.
So you know it's now with more.
So you know it's good.
It's a hard-boiled candy.
Guaranteed 14% strontium.
Here we go. I'll see you all around.
I want to see 10 seconds of this.
Here we go.
Go, 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 go. Don't swallow him.
More.
Yeah. His face looks like he's an actor in like one of those like Porky's type movies, and where it's like someone's mom comes in like a size 55 underpants.
Can I stop now?
No. All right. Okay. Let's be quiet.
Okay.
Ah. Oh. Fuck. Please let me spit them out. I love you, Mom. Ow. Oh, God. That's it. I'm done.
Tell me when you're ready. It doesn't matter. It can be. Right, that's
okay.
the point that you got
right,
nothing
that
to
I,
say.
That I got nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I do.
GFW Radio. Listen to our podcast. Yo, yo.
Oh, shit.
Are we gonna keep? Oh, that was it?
Give me like, okay, I'll go.
Go on, take two. Here we go. Oh, shit. GFW Radio. Listen to our podcast. Yo, yo, Ryan Scott, he is a man. I quit this joint. That was my plan. Wow.
There we go.
That was bad.
That was
Are we
it.
Done?
Yeah, we're done.
Okay, we're done. We're out. Bye.